I'd say we're doing, and we've worked for the last 2 years on that project, and it came to fruition just today. The staff, the whole staff, have moved up here. They're now employees of VMRC. If you want, after the meeting, we have an aging lab that is just, you know, just taking shape in the back over here. And so we have Hank and Jessica Gilmore as the technician from that lab coming on board, and they're brand new tonight. So let's make sure that Hank decides this is worth his effort to come here and not make too much of a, you know, a scene tonight. But it's the other thing I want to mention. A lot of you have already heard that Rob O'Reilly, after 32 years, is retiring. He told the staff a few weeks ago, and we were like, we were really happy for him until he told us. It's like, well, it's September 15th, and we all went, wow, that's coming in. It's, you know, it came a lot quicker than we thought. So he couldn't be here tonight. He sends his regards. He had something going on at home. You know, 32 years of knowledge. I mean, I've known Rob my entire career, and I think he may have interviewed me for my first job. Him and Jack Travel said that's how long I've known him. I've worked with Rob at the commission level when I was down in Georgia, and it's going to be hard press. You know, to fill those, as I said, 8.5. He said it's actually nine size 9 shoes. So they announced just the other day I will be the new chief, and I'm definitely looking forward to it. I know it's going to be a challenge. I'm excited for it, and it's it's going to be hard filling those shoes. And we have an excellent staff, and you know, the staff is second to none. And you know, working in several organizations in the past, I can say that with all honesty, they work hard, they know their jobs, and we rely on them to get, you know, do the best, and they do. And so if I don't have the answer, I'm sure one of them have it, or we can find it for you. So that's all I have. We have a really busy agenda tonight, and we'll get going from there. Thanks.
Right, well, congratulations to you on the promotion, and you do have some tough shoes to fill.
Yes, I know. Thank you.
If you've attended any of the Mid-Atlantic Council meetings or the ASMFC meetings and watched Jack Travelstead and then Rob O'Reilly in action, they're always, always commenting in Virginia's favor. Usually the most vocal people from any state at those meetings. So
and usually very timely, too. They'll go back and wait till everything else is said, and they say something that's very timely and poignant, and people go, oh, yeah, we didn't think about that.
Great history with them. Thank you. All right. Approval from the minutes. Everybody have a chance to read the minutes and check them. Any changes? Any opposition to approving the minutes? So approved. Thank you. Okay. That brings the new business, commercial hook and line size limit for summer flounder. We'll start with that.
So this is an item that we wanted to bring in front of FMAC for discussion. This is just to give you, this is to adjust or amend the minimum size limit for summer flounder, specifically for the commercial hook and line gear. This is an item that we plan on bringing to the commission tomorrow for a request for public hearing. If that request is approved by the commission tomorrow, there will be a public hearing in September for this issue. So we wanted to bring in front of you tonight to get FMAC's feedback, to get and be able to relay FMAC's thoughts and feelings on this at the September commission meeting, but we wanted to do it now. That way we had everything, all the ducks in a row before that came up. So currently there's been an issue where the recreational limit for summer flounder with hook and line gear is 16.5 inches. You've got people fishing with the same gear types in the same areas, and the commercial limit is 14 inches. So this is an issue that has come in front of this committee and has been talked about quite a few times over the year. Originally came up in the Commercial Hook and Line Task Force in 1994. At that point, they decided not to do anything. At the request of the CCA, they reassembled the Commercial Hook and Line Task Force in 2000. That was specifically to look at season and bag limits. There was no recommendations that came out of that for summer flounder. This was brought in front of this committee, FMAC, in January 2010. This committee decided no action at that time. It was brought back in November 2010. It was considered he considered no action at that time either. So this is an issue that, because there has been no resolution, it seems to peek its head up again from time to time. So we're looking for some feedback tonight, and it's generally an issue with a lot of polarity, that there's viewpoints on both sides of both that commercial sector and that recreational sector. But there's been a 2018 stock assessment for summer flounder that just came out. The report shows that summer flounder is not overfished. Overfishing is not occurring. But we are part of a coastwide assessment. So although the coastwide assessment came back well, and we are asking tomorrow for a request for public hearing for an increase in commercial quota, the story in Virginia is a little bit different. We take, well, in recent years, about 100,000 pounds of our Virginia quota, and we allocate it to the inshore fisheries here in Virginia. This is just a quick snapshot. You can see on the left there the commercial harvest. This is a 10-year snapshot. In 2010, we were over 250,000 pounds, and just availability of harvest, we're down to about 26,200 pounds in 2018, and that trend is continuing this year. It mirrors itself in the recreational harvest. We see recreational harvest. This does not include dead discards. This is from MRIP, just over 600,000, and now 2018, just over 100,000. So a downward trend in harvest in Chesapeake Bay, a downward trend in availability in Chesapeake Bay. So specifically, the commercial hook and line fishery, this was a license established back in 1994 by that same commercial hook and line task force that I mentioned. The hook and line license is limited to 200 licenses every year. We don't go over that. There's a qualification for these licenses. In order to keep that license, you have to have 1,000 pounds of seafood sales, and that doesn't have to be harvesting with that commercial hook and line license. That can be sales of any kind of seafood. We just want to make sure that it's active in order for you to keep it and active in order for you to transfer. So on the left, this table shows that we have 200 commercial hook and line licenses, but of those 200, you can see in 2018, only 102 of them actually used or reported using commercial hook and line gear. So everyone else qualified using different gear. Of those 102 individuals, only about 36 of them actually catch flounder with that hook and line gear. Give you a snapshot of that hook and line fishery. This is a 3-year snapshot. I kind of pulled the top 10 species. So summer flounder is about 20% over the last 3 years of the harvest and accounts for about 15,000 pounds. You can see the other top species round out with cobia, striped bass, croaker, and talk.
Can you ask a question?
Yes.
I'm trying to figure out in 2018,
mm-hmm.
of the 102 that had commercial hook and line, 36 of those
200 people have a commercial hook and line license.
Now
102 of those actually used the gear.
So,
and of those 102, 36
guys reported catching flounder.
You got it.
And what I'm trying to get is how many pounds did those guys catch? And what
on average 15,000, obviously 2018 was, I don't have the specific gear, I have it here somewhere, but on average about 15,000 over the last 3 years, those 36 individuals.
What is the 19.6?
That's the percent of the hook and line harvest. So about 20 of all the commercial hook and line harvest, everything those guys are, about 20% of everything they catch is flounder.
So how many pounds of flounder did those 36 guys catch?
15,000 pounds.
And what was their average size?
We'll get there.
And the reason I'm trying to get at is,
so here's the average size. So we have a biological sampling program, goes out into the place of business. So what you're looking here is samples by commercial hook and line gear. So overall, between that 14 and 16 and a half inches, where we're trying to move that size limit from that 14 up to 16 and a half, over the last 10 years, it's been about 53% of the harvest is those smaller fish. But if you look at the last couple years, 17 and 18, it's hard to see on here. But that's actually increasing. It's going up to about 60% over the last couple years. So you're taking, you know, more and more small fish from this population. So what does that mean practically? What you're looking at here is some age information on flounder. So on the left-hand side, this is a probability. So if you pulled a male flounder out of the water, it's 14 inches right at that size limit, it's probably 35%, it's probably less than a one-year-old. You know, some of them, 30% chance that it's a two-year-old, and about 25% that's a three-year-old. So what that means is if you pull 14-inch out, it can vary between three different ages. So according to the most recent stock assessment, males at that 14 inches, about 95% are mature at age one, about 99% are mature at age two. So if we allow these flounder to go from 14 inches up to 16.5 inches, they're getting one, two, if not three more years of sexual maturity to be able to reproduce.
14 is too small.
And that mirrors itself in that female. So if you look at females, about 96% are mature at age two, 83%. So 83% of these fish mature at age one. So if we allow them to grow to be 16.5 inches, you're getting two more years of spawning in that population. So why are we here tonight? We are going to a request for public hearing tomorrow. As I said in the beginning, we're going to bring this to public hearing in front of the commission in September. We're looking for feedback from this committee in order to bring to the commission. So they'll have a staff recommendation. They'll have feedback from FMAC as well, and they can go through the public hearing process.
Okay.
Couple comments and I'll get to it. You know, it's been in front of business committee four times with no action taken, so that means they considered it was no action needed. So we're bringing it back. We know a scientific fact we've heard many times in this committee meeting that like 16.5 inches are catching mostly the fast growers, which is the ones you really kind of want to leave behind, is that it's the one that's mature quicker and can grow better. The reason it's 16.5 inches on the recreational side is it's a way to try to control the harvest. It doesn't work because, you know, some years we've been a million times over. So the availability is what really counts on flounders. You know, if it happens to be the right weather phenomenon that most of them come to Virginia, no matter what regulations you have, you're going to be over. And if they don't come, you can let them keep anything. It's not going to make any difference. So what you really are asking people to do is regulate commercial harvest twice. It's already been regulated under a hard quota. The recreational is not. The commercial is a hard quota. This is part of a commercial kit. I think the quota is, I don't know if it, in our state, I can't be positive, but it's over half commercial on a coastwide basis. We're looking at 10% of the recreational flounder caught in the bay are commercial. So it's a very small number. It's basically jealousy. We're getting to keep something that I can't. So, you know, I feel like they're already being regulated once. If you want them to 16.5 inches, don't count against commercial quota because they already have the quota in place, and that's what the 14 inches allows for. I really don't see why you could, you know, I want to regulate anybody, commercial or recreational, twice on the same thing. If you don't have a regulation, it's got to be uniform. So everybody else in the commercial fishery can say 14-inch fish, except for the man hooking line. And when this first came out, most of the commercial people were not for hooking line. And the big push was from the CCA, because that was about the time the CCA formed in Virginia in 94. And they thought it would be a good way forward because they wanted to do away with enforce the Gillnet ban and a lot of other things. Close down within 3 miles, which they did. So now I don't know why. If you're for it at one time and now you're against it, and it has no scientific basis whatsoever, you know, it's much more important to conserve the females than it is the males. You know, one male can probably fertilize more than one female, but one female can only go once. So, my recommendation, as far as I'm concerned, is I would never vote for this to do this. You know, we're already under a hard quota. It's not causing any problem. It's just a perceived problem because they feel like it's inequity that somebody can handle it and catch them. But it's no numbers involved. 15,000 times is no numbers. So that's where I stand on it.
Thank you. Anybody else?
I just would like to ask Bob if there's no problem selling 14-inch with it there.
All the hook and line planner on my dock, typically Myra, the sampling program, she checks everything. And no, they actually, the smaller ones are better. I've got, you know, the walk-up trade is medium planner. We saw a lot of those. So we need those. And a lot of these hook and line guys are retired, Frank and Faye Daniels. I've got school teachers, they do it to supplement their income, and they've had hard years catching. You're talking 15,000 every 3 years, correct?
Yep.
So you're talking 5,000 a year, it's a drop in the bucket. It's not hurting anything, but to take that away from them.
15,000 on average, so it's not 5,000 a year. It's about 15,000 each year over 3 years.
Gotcha. Yep. It's still not a lot of fish in compared to the whole quota, but I feel like it would hurt these people who use this. They got the hook and line license for a reason, to supplement their retirement, and this is what they do all summer, so it's really going to hurt them. So I'm not a fan of it, and there's not a problem, and it's no problem to sell them.
I agree with Ernie. It's a jealousy thing where
that's all it is.
Yeah.
Mike?
Well, it's not overfished, so I don't see why I cut the commercial side, and the commercial side is such a small portion. If it was overfished, and we're going to change the commercial to 16.5, figure out what percentage that is of the 15,000 pounds, and make an equal change on the recreational side. And that's going to get a lot of public outrage. And still, it's not overfished, so leave it the way it is.
Part of that 14-inch minimum size, when it comes from the trawl fishery, because there's such high mortality in that trawl fishery, I think the most recent assessment was 75-80%. Throwing back those small fish was where that came from. But when you look at something like hook and line, that mortality drops drastically down to about 10%. So although it is a small conservation measure, it was a conservation measure in mind that for that year.
And then from a law enforcement standpoint, the couple on the dock, how do they know how it was caught? For me, I've got a guy that's got a hook and line license and a pound net license. So
it would have to be enforcement at the place of harvest.
Right. So.
Because we do have other fish that have, speckled trout is one.
I don't agree with that either. That should be, it's a hard quota on that. You shouldn't penalize a cow.
We should look into that also.
We should look into that. Thank you for bringing it up.
My turn. At what age, above a certain size, they're all females. What size is that?
I don't have that in front of me unless Alex knows it off the top of his head.
Somebody told me once it was anything over 16.5 inches is female.
Somewhere in there. I don't have it specifically.
So if we did this, or if we supported this move, we would be shifting more effort towards females, which is what everybody in the flounder business has been against for as long as I can remember. They want to know how we get the pressure off the female population. So. Okay, so anybody, do you need a motion from us?
I don't need a motion. If you'd like to put I'm going to take all this information and I'm going to convey that as one arm for the decision making for the commission. If you'd like to centralize that all into a motion, that would be fine either way. I can still give the information. That's
like
up to the committee.
For the record. Okay. Would you like to make it?
I'll make a recommendation if that would like.
You don't want to do Mike, you want to go first?
I'd like a motion to leave things as is.
Okay.
No changes.
Any opposition? Seeing none, I'm going to abstain as chairman, so if you're ready, we'll.
I just want to comment, this will be going, you know, a request for public hearing. It's never made it that far, it's always died here.
Right.
But it's come up 5 times. So, as an administrative point, do we want it to go forward to the commission and have it be, you know, and then have it, you know, not approved there, or do we not want it to go to the commission at all?
We don't support it, so
okay.
You can take that however.
I guess the thought was if it went to the commission and they said no to it, then we would, you know, we'd put this issue to rest forever, okay. So to speak.
If they want our opinion.
But they could, approve it. That's the problem, too.
Okay.
Thank you. Where's the push coming from?
Same place it's come from before.
Well, I'm uninformed on that. Where's before?
Recreational anglers.
I'm a recreational angler. I'm not.
Okay. I mean, it's the same. It's the same issue that's come up.
It doesn't make sense to me why you're going to go after the hook and line side of this if the issue is on the trawl side. You're not talking big numbers here, so
yeah, we agree. It's just
agree with my colleagues.
Okay. Over the years, it's been a polarizing issue with recreational against commercial. You guys are echoing very many of the same things that were echoed reading through the minutes 20 years ago with the original task force meeting and through FMAC. You know, the only thing that's really changed is, you know, the first slide I showed here, you know, bringing us all the way back to that, is we do have a decrease in Virginia over the last 10 years as far as availability of summer flounder, as far as the harvest of summer flounder. So that is one reason to go forward with this, is to be conservation minded. And although it might be, like you said, it's only 15,000 pounds, only a few number of fish, it is a portion of fish that will help this.
It's a decline of everything in the bay. It's not just flounder. It's everything. So I don't think.
I mean, we realize that some of it is environmental. There's a shift of summer flounder to the north.
Both sides drop. If one side was spiking and the other side dropped, I could see a conflict. But both sides have tapered down.
Yeah.
And flounder is very well related. We all know that. You know, we've had years that we've doubled our recreational quota. We didn't really have a quota, but double what they thought they were going to catch anyway, just because it was ideal. And if it's ideal again, we'll see the same thing again.
Could you post some sort of a notice on your website to explain to people? I think it's a lot of it has to do with people don't understand why it's 14 for commercial. And
we can do that.
As long as that size fits on the plate better.
Any comments from the audience on that? I'm sorry.
You had a motion on the table. I don't know if we voted on that motion.
We did. And there was
or you can take comments. Just.
Well,
so
we'll take comments and then we'll see.
Yeah, on the hook line.
If you'd come up to the and tell us who you are, please.
My name is Delaney Black. I'm hook and line. And I actually was hook and lining around the bridge in the 80s when the license came along. So here all of a sudden we're put out of business. We've been there 5-6 years catching togs and flounder. License comes out. I try to get a license. I can't get a hook and line license until almost 2010. Without having a commercial card to start with, only because I didn't have one. Now I turned 61 today, and they want to turn around and mess with the flounder. I'm already run off of every bridge, every jetty, from Friday afternoon till Sunday evening. So I can only fish around any of the flounder spots from Monday morning or Sunday evening until Friday afternoon, and I got to clear out. I guess because they don't want to see me catching what I'm there. Togs, like they say, they do come and go, but more people are taking more togs than they're actually telling them they were taking. And now, you know, here I'm just getting started. My days of togs at the bridge were 200 and 300 pounds a day. So just because I don't have a good catch one day don't mean that the very next day they ain't all going to be there or I move along the bridge there. But back to the flounder. We did see a bigger catch of 16-inch flounder and 16.5-inch flounders. But the flounder problem was the trawl boats against Virginia Beach down there. When they ran them off 3 miles, they were back right up in Little Creek, 12 and 14 inches the next week almost. So the flounder does come back. The count was high in 2010. We probably had 102 guys fishing. You're down to 36 guys fishing, and they're catching 15,000. They're doing pretty good by themselves on that. But they're still not around the bridges, the jetties. But I still got to be 1,000 feet off. So. That's just one point on the flounder.
I appreciate your input.
I do believe that's total commercial landing, so it's not just hook and line, isn't it?
For what?
That would be total. That would be pound net also. That's total landing.
So for pound net, he's still got to be 14 inches?
When it was 250,000 pound. That was not just hook and line. That was all specific bag, regardless of how they were caught. Probably it was commercial.
Okay, Tim, if you don't tell us who you are.
Jim Dawson, commercial hook and line fisherman since the beginning, 93. We had a problem 93 to 95 where they treated us with the same bag limits, and we really had a hard time getting through that. And I'm just going to let VMRC know straight up. I make my living this way, and I will challenge legally anything that tries to separate one commercial person from another is not going to happen anymore. Not, I don't care how much it costs. You know, it's just straight discrimination. I believe Ernie said it straight up. Hard quota is set. So the fellow he's talking about, he has all this statistical data. I have observers going on my boat all the time from the federal government, and I haven't had anybody going on my boat for flounder, and I don't know where they're getting all these size information. I have the only federal permit that allows me to fish past 3 miles. I've got two of them. And I catch flounder offshore, but your marketability has gone down from the live halibut that they're bringing in, and the price goes down to $3 a pound, and they're bringing it in from Korea. And I mean, they're flying it in. It's cheaper than what we can go fish for them, so you're not going to see anybody bringing in flounder when it's like that. And then when the trawlers come in with 10, 12,000 pounds, when they come in from state to state, they drive the market price down. So from a smaller fish standpoint, I fillet my own fish for my customers, and the smaller fish yields higher than the bigger fish. Believe it or not, there's a higher percentage yield. And it's a very, very nice market, but we have to be able to fish for them when they come in, and they just haven't been coming inside. We really haven't had any fish on the inside since about 2012 that I could afford to fish for. So, you know, what he's talking about is 15,000 pounds caught as an average, and then they want 53% cut from that, and there's no justification for it. I don't know why they want to take half or more. That's not even hardly anything that we're fishing for in the first place. I mean, it's certainly nothing of what we were catching in 2010 when they were coming inside. I mean, they come back in again. If they come back down, they're supposed to be all held up off New Jersey. Well, I catch plenty of them offshore, and they don't quite make it to the Maryland-Virginia line. They just basically stop a little bit south of Ocean City. And, you know, we catch 150, no problem. As long as the price is right, price will go up certain times, and that's what we fish for them. But you'll get 550 to 650 a pound for them. And as soon as another state opens up, it's not even worth fishing for them. So that's some of the reason that you don't see some of the 36 people reporting as much as they are is the market price. So if there's any other question to that, I mean, that's why you're seeing what you're seeing and not seeing what you're seeing coming inside. I don't know why they won't come inside when there's plenty of them offshore. But I have the only license that allows that. And I don't want to see anything happen to that either. But I make a good living catching what I catch and filleting it for my customers. I have to do what I have to do to survive because we don't have that many more fish anymore. There's nothing to fish for. I just don't want to see anything happen to what we have, and I'd like to be treated equal. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. All right. Anything else from the table? So, by consensus, we've decided that we're not in favor of this motion.
Okay. And I can bring that forward to, I'll bring that forward to the commission tomorrow at the request, and I'll make sure it gets reiterated.
We better off squashing it here than putting it before the commission, because like you said, they could vote for it, and there's no sense to it. So if we just keep squashing it here, having put it before, then we better move.
Right, it's going to go in front of the commission for requests tomorrow. It's on the agenda, but I can very well bring the recommendation from this committee to the commission.
All right. Thank you. Are you handling tow talk for us as well?
No, I'm not. That'd be Alexa.
evening. I'm letting you guys know about some changes that are coming down the pike for TATOG, the commercial TATOG tagging program. So some of the Mid-Atlantic and New England states have been having trouble with black market TATOG, not just smaller fish, undersized fish, but also just illegal unreported. So recreational fishermen selling catch, apparently it's been a big problem in, I know New Jersey and Massachusetts say they've been having trouble with this. So the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission recommended a tagging program. Amendment 1 require that all commercial TATOG be tagged after January 1st, 2019. In 2018, they voted to push that effective date back to January 1, 2020, based on finding the best tag available. So here are commercial landings of TATOG in Virginia. You can see it's been declining since about 2012. TATOG are, in our region of Delmarva, are overfished, but no, overfishing is not occurring. And I know there's been a lot of market-driven issues with people choosing to sell TATOG or not. And then on the right is the coastwide commercial TATOG landing. You can see Virginia is this little bar down here. So the commission, the Atlantic States Commission, decided on an operculum tag. The tag needed to stay on live fish as they're being held in tanks. They needed to not impact the appearance or the condition of live fish and had to be difficult to forge or reuse. These were tested being held in tanks in New York and were tested in Massachusetts and a couple other states on the water. You can see the tag and the applicator below there. Here's a couple pictures from the study in New York. You can see the applicator with a tag inside ready to apply. You can see it being applied to the operculum, and then that is the fish with an operculum tag applied. And these are the tags. If you want to take a look, I'm happy to bring them up. So the requirement to have a tag is mandatory. That's from the Atlantic States. It's in the amendment. And it's required that we use those particular tags from National Band and Tag. How we administer the tag is up to the state. So right now our plan, any commercial harvester can be licensed. There's no limited entry. VMRC will distribute tags based on a licensee's historical harvest or a minimum amount if there's no history of harvest. So, you know, that sleeve is 25 tags. So if someone says, you know, I haven't harvested a TATOG before, but, you know, it's the commercial hook and line. Sometimes I come across one and I want to sell it. He can get the 25, and then however many you got in the beginning, if you need more, you come to us and we give out more. The tags, once they're in their final form, will have the state on it. So the TATOG tagged with Virginia tags will only be landed in Virginia. It'll have the year. So you, a year's tag may only tag fish harvested from January 1 to December 31st. And then they have to start using the next year's tags. And then there will be the tag number, which will be tied to a particular licensee. There'll be no transfers or agents for this. And then the fish must be tagged prior to landing. So VMRC will distribute licenses and tags of in December of each year. January 1st, licensees must use the New Year's tags, and December 31st will be the last day they use the previous year's tags. By February 15th, all previous year's tags must be returned or accounted for to VMRC. And then fish tagged prior to January 1st, so with the old year's tags, must be sold through the end of February or some final market date. That's still up for discussion. Over the past couple of years, we've had 17 to 25 harvesters per year. 2018, not a great year. We only had 5 harvesters. Right now, I'm doing a harvester survey, asking people, have you harvested this hog? Do you think you'll get a license for next year? And asking some information about the live market. So far, 56 of the 200 hook and line fishermen have replied. 13 say they have previously sold the tog, but 31 say they will want a license and tags. So that's something we have to build into how many tags we request. Other than that, all the regulations will stay the same. No daily limit for commercial, just the season and the 15-inch size limit. So in September, we'll be requesting a public hearing. The public hearing will be at our October meeting. In December, license sales and tag distribution will begin. And then January 1st, 2020, all commercial to tog must be tagged. And I'm happy to take any questions, suggestions, recommendations.
That's dead or alive. 2020 is dead or alive.
Right.
Everything.
Right. The idea is if officers go to a market and there's an untagged fish, it was illegally sold.
But in the beginning, just the live one.
Nope, it's going to be January 1st, all the tog.
I asked about this previously. From a packing house standpoint, I've got 20 gill netters and they catch them on by accident. I had asked if the packing house could be issued tags or our biological sampler. I could call Myra and say, hey, I've got a tog here. You know, could she tag it? That way we're not throwing over fish in the name of conservation. It's rare, but we do get them from time to time, and I hate to throw those away.
That did come up at the last board meeting, and they said no to dealers tagging. I know because, like Maryland, some of the smaller states asked, because they are bringing in so few at a time, they asked if the tags could be with the dealer, with the house, and they said no.
Sample. So I should tell every gillnet boat they should get tags and a crimping thing just in case they catch one?
Essentially.
Yep. Yep. That's right. Crab potters too.
Yep.
I mean, anybody who sells tall got to have a clip in it now.
Okay. It just seems it would be cheaper on the VMRC. It would be cheaper to let the biological sampler, I could text her and say, hey, I've got a tog, or the packing house. It doesn't make sense.
But they'd have to have a license.
A tog license.
Right.
Something new.
Okay,
so
we are creating a tog license. And then,
so then
with the license, we give you tags. And then your fish must be tagged by the time it is landed.
So gill netters can't catch them they have to get a license.
If they didn't have a license, they wouldn't be able to sell it.
So they only have to apply for a tog license.
Right.
I think the motion is does Virginia want to charge us for the license? Right now they're going to give us the license. Do they want to charge us for it?
Ernie?
You're probably throwing 99% of the tags away every year. Because, I mean, you know, like he says, this is a rare occasion. I have caught them. And, you know, they've been big ones. I don't even have no idea what they're worth, because they eat the most good stuff. But, I've got a 14, 15 pounder, probably a couple dollars, right?
$5.
Okay. It used to be 10 cents. Used to land a lot of them, shank and pig, fast pops, when they were fast pop hung, you know, you were there maybe then. And they were worthless, and then they really developed a mod market. That's when they were really worth a lot of money. But it was like they. If I'm allowed to recreational crew limit and size limit, I'll just take it home and eat them because the tags are going to rust out under the front of my boat. Because I don't want to catch them. They're structure oriented. That's one thing you don't want to do with the gill net, is fix around bottom structure because you're really going to tear your gear up. So I'm like, and you know, the time we really catch them is when they're limited migration, but they really don't migrate. They just kind of stay to the work, get cold, they fall over and soak it over and stuff.
But you're near such a bad if you catch them, you don't want to.
I mean, you know, I guess if they're not willing, you're talking about the AFMSC was the one not willing to do anything. I used to get all the law enforcement data and stuff from AFMSC, and almost, of course, they always call them blackfish above us instead of tall, and almost all of the law enforcement problem was New York. Some to Massachusetts, but the vast majority of it was New York. So you got these little states. We were just a little hash mark to the bottom, and you could have said that was a princess around the whole thing. Actually, the line that went around it was bigger than our line on the bottom.
Okay.
I just think it's a waste of money, but it's not. I can guess it is my money.
Yep.
I'm going to say it isn't, but it is my money.
We have some comments from the audience.
Is that what your intentions are, is people to get a license and stuff just in case?
We've got people taking 50, 60 tons a day off the bridge on recreational license.
I was talking to the staff. I mean, is that what happened? Is they just, they want to issue tags and crimpers to anybody who might possibly catch one?
It'll have to be. That's why we contacted all the hook and line fishermen to let them know, because it is such a species of opportunity. You know, some people go fishing for them, but a lot more people just come across them.
Okay, Mike.
So pound netters have to get the license as well?
Anyone who wants to sell tautog. It's going to be every tautog in a market must be tagged.
So it's a lot more numbers of people that will end up getting them than what you have called.
Well, that's, yeah. If we were trying to figure out what's the percentage of people who are interested, because if we just went with how many people have harvested tautog, we'd be vastly underestimating the number of people, the number of tags we're giving out.
In the spring, in O'Beers, I see them coming in boxes, not a lot, from the pound nets off the Greenville.
I don't think you catch the central line of pound net either. The only way they would catch them is just like us when they're migrating somewhere, and they have very limited migration patterns.
All righty.
I think you have vastly underestimated, because I should tell everyone I packed 30 different commercial gill netters at different times, so I'm going to call them all and say, you guys better get a license and a tag and thing, just so you, in case you catch one. So there's a way around that, and I think we should try to do it. It's not too late. And metal tags, they're not stainless, are they?
As
long as they're stainless.
Are we a de minimis state? Are we under 2%? They look like it on that.
No, we are not de minimis.
What is our catch?
Last year, I think it was about 3,000 or 4,000 pounds, but last year was much lower than usual. Usual, we're probably up around 5,000-6,000 pounds.
Well, what is the coastline harvest?
She had a good chart.
Pounds.
So we're are them in the state if they use the 2% that they ever used before?
2018.
I mean, you know, it's too late now, but can we argue in the future that we are them in the state and the dealers could possibly do something like that?
Even de minimis are being held to the tagging. Maryland and Delaware asked if they could. Maryland asked for some concessions because they are de minimis, and it's all fish have to be tagged. Otherwise, you go to the market, see an untagged fish. That one came from Maryland.
So they would be tagged. In a case like him, they would tag them. Myra's been there all the time. Myra could even tag them.
I would have a biological sampler. She's on my dock 5 days a week. If I get one on the weekend, I call her and text her and say, hey, I guess it's out of our hands anyhow now, but yeah, so she knows I'm in possession of that fish. She can come in Monday and tag it before it goes for sale. Just seems like common sense.
Almost every fisher I've been involved with, and I've been doing this for a very long time, Rob just retired after 32 years. I was here 2 months before he started, so I remember when they hired him. I think we could start to argue the de minimis part, and because it's just a tremendous waste of resources.
You're going to be better off giving half a dozen dealers a thing and tags versus 100, 200 gill netters that pop up saying, okay, I need one in case I catch one.
You know, I remember 1 year Rob went ahead and got metal tags to save a lot of money, and they ended up getting rusted, thrown away, cut people's hands, had more bad infections. And that's what these tags look for, stainless steel. They're just going to rust out. You're not going to be able to identify them by the end of the year.
All right. Yes, sir, please.
I think there's 2,000 commercial.
Come to the podium, please.
It's 2,000 commercial watermen in Virginia.
If we got 2,000 or 2,800 watermen, that means that's 2,800 sets of tags, not 25 sets of tags. So that's every hoop net, gill net, hook and liner's got to have it. What stops them from bringing you a truckload and you just tagging them, but we don't know where they came from? So it would be the responsibility of the guy catching it to do it. If I'm going out here and try to catch 10 tog and I got to put it in it to make a living, then the crab potter got to put it in there too. But the thing was, they're going to try to start selling it in December, but right now there's no charge for the license for the tag. They're willing to give everybody the license and the tag.
That's going to be decided by the commission in October.
Yeah.
We have a problem with people that won't obey the law, unfortunately. And
well, this will hopefully pick it back up to where we can get the catches back. And the tog, this one, the flounder, started at 16 and a half to start reef. What does the tog do? Is he growing 1 pound a year, 2 pounds a year? How many pounds does he grow? Does it take me 10, 15 years to get a 10-pound tog? So that's a lot different than a fish that's growing 3 and 4 or 5 pounds a year.
Well, we're trying to address the illegal trade. This is what they've come up with. Jim
Dawson, commercial.
Jim, do me a favor and pull the microphone.
This one?
Oh, there is one over there. Okay. I can't see it from here.
Yeah, Jim Dawson, commercial fisherman, Chincoteague. I'm named the advisor for this fishery. I haven't really heard much out of anybody, but I know that Rich Pachowski catches more than anybody, and I believe that the numbers are down. I think, Ernie, you're a little bit mistaken on some of the migratory patterns changed. I see them come through my ponds, and they don't come down from the north until about May 15th now, and then our season's closed. We have a problem with our season. It's November and December, and then the tag, you know, goes bad. What happens then? That really needs to be addressed. It may be time to get some kind of 5 years of our best data and get a quota so that we have tags for those people who caught them and give everybody their 5 year best total and issue those kind of tags or whatever. But you got to have something to start from, but our season is the reason that we're not catching. I'm just not seeing those fish until our season's closed. A number one. I mean, they're not showing up till May, and then by the time November, December gets there, we really don't have the weather. We don't have, you know, the fish. So certainly if they were just wintering over, or if they're just rolling over and silting over, I mean, all the recreational people are catching them all, but that's not happening either. So I do see us. I see a lot of them, but it's during that close season. So, you know, I would request that we have some sort of meeting with the other commercial harvesters, whether it's 5 or 15 or whatever it is, and see what in the world we could do, because tagging these fish and then it only being good for 2 months, we might want to request a different. I have no idea. I mean, if we're keeping these things live in a tank, we're waiting to accumulate until we have enough that they can come get them, and then we're having a problem with the live fish because, you know, they're bringing in halibut and all these other things that are cheaper because we can't fish but for a few months, and then that's during the time where the price is down. So I'm seeing a huge difference in you know, how we've been regulated out of business. It's just not allowing us to fish when we have fish available. And Virginia was never one to go to a quota. I mean, I think if I had my 5 best years, I could tolerate that. I don't know about Rich. I'd be very interested in what he has to say because he knows a lot more about it. I only took this position because he didn't.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Rich Pachowski.
I guess when you get up
adult.
Come on, Rich. Educate us, Rich.
Yeah, I need education.
My name is Rich Michalski from Watch Creek, Virginia. Black fishing I've been doing since 1981, New York, New Jersey, and the past 25 years here. With the tagging, I think it's bull crap. I used to go to these meetings up in New York and New Jersey back in the early 90s. And the one way to fix this is don't let a recreational guy bring home live fish. As easy as that. And they don't want to hear it. So. Anything else? I'm just against the tagging of it. Because I don't know how long is it going to take. I mean, I leave my dock at 5:30 in the morning during the winter. It's dark. I come home after sunset. I got to pack my fish and I keep them live. Is it going to add, if I catch 90 fish during the day, is it going to add another 90 minutes to my night? So, and if you put your thumb, you put your finger in the gill, they have a good chance of dying. So. Okay. Any questions?
No? It's not.
Okay.
Thanks, Rich. Alexa, is there, this isn't going up for public hearing. This is settled, I take it.
This is already.
That they're going to be tagging is settled. How Virginia tags is going to a public hearing. So the license system, some of the dates, anything to do with the licensing and tag distribution will be for an October public hearing.
All right.
I have a curiosity question. What's the estimated cost of this program and where is the funding going to come from?
That's going to depend on how many tags we order. Right now, it's...
Under your current plan.
Right now, it's going to be 26 cents a tag for, let's say, 2,000 tags is going to be,
I'm just a guess, we said about... of what the program is going to cost, not just the cost of the tags, but there's going to be a cost relative to manpower to administer it, to track it, and so forth and so on. Within VMRC, there's got to be a budgetary line item figure for what this program is going to cost. That's what I'm asking.
It's going to depend on the size of the program. And again, if we assume that only people who harvested in the previous years harvested, that's up to 25 people.
All right.
We know it's going to be bigger. We don't know how much bigger. So that's going to determine what the time costs are.
We know the cost of the tags and the applicants. We don't know how much time it's going to be to how many people are actually participating.
So there's no estimated cost at this point.
We're still working on it. Like I said, I've got this survey out to see what interest is, and that's going to determine by, I think, early September, we'll probably have our order into ASMFC.
Seems that since you don't know the breadth of this because you haven't gotten all of the potential commercial fishermen together, pound netters, for example, if you have a public hearing, you're going to get more recreational side, and they don't care because it's not impacting them. So it seems that there should be a committee or a meeting or something that you organize to get all of the fishermen that report tog, not just the hook and line, and staff it from there. So it seems like you've got more staff work to do before you have a public hearing and before it goes to a commission.
In the previous couple of years, of our mandatory reporting, only a handful of harvested to tog were not hook and line. The vast majority, I'm going to say, probably 95% of the harvesters who report to tog are hook and line.
And get as many of them together as you can.
We will be doing outreach. This can definitely be a part of it.
A point, this has to be in place by January 1. We don't have an option on this. It's in place January 1 where tog commercial fishing is shut down in this state.
That's it. We can have a public meeting. To be perfectly honest, and this is probably one of the best attended meetings we've had in a while. A lot of times we don't get good attendance at these meetings, and you've seen that as well. We can do that. How many people are going to show up? We don't know. I don't know if we can go to the ASMSC and say, look, we have some serious concerns about this, about how we're going to address some of the things that Scott brought up, and you know whether or not we can try to put those into our plan. You know, they're saying it's everybody has to have a license, and yes, it is not practical for somebody who may catch one here or catch one there. Maybe they haven't thought about that. It's an unforeseen circumstance. Maybe we can talk to them and say, look, we have an issue with this, but we do have to put something in place. It's a mandate that we have to do, and it's how we operate and how we set that up. So
it seems like then if for 1 year only, if you could give your buyers some tags, then they can educate and inform the fishermen who would get the tags after that. But at least give the buyers some tags so that they don't have to refuse a fish.
I mean, we can't make any guarantees. All we can do is talk to the commission staff and see, you know, explain some of the things that you all said.
And I might go 2 or 3 years without seeing one that's not from a hookline guy. It's just a rare occurrence, that's all. And I just hate to throw them over in the name of conservation, so that was my whole point.
We have an idea how many people have actually taught, you know, fishing and everything, and about 25 to 30?
17 to 25 in the last 5 years.
We don't know how many people are incidental take, where someone catches a few fish and they want to sell it. That can be, as somebody said, it could be as many as 2,500. As far as budget, we don't have that kind of money.
And to Ernie's point, we may want to, I understand that it's mandated, we have to do it now, but to Ernie's point, we may want to consider filing for de minimis status in future years.
But we still have to do it. We
still have to do it this year, that is correct.
No, we have to do it even if we're de minimis.
Well, it's not on de minimis, you don't have to follow a regulation.
That's correct.
He's been involved in the offer.
Yeah, I believe this tagging program is still, if you're de minimis, you still have to do it.
You know, just like some states, Georgia and South Carolina, probably were a couple of them. They had de minimis on some things because they caught very little. They had to have the minimum size. They had to keep certain things, like sweetfish, for example. They had to have a 12-inch minimum. They had to do that, but they didn't have to do a lot of the other measures because they didn't catch hardly any. And you think Virginia was probably number one in sweetfish at one time, and followed by New Jersey, and North Carolina was very big, too. So we had to do the brunt of the regulation. But Maine would catch very few. They were at the minimum. So I realize they've already done this. So this is what we're going to do now, but we need to argue the fact that we need to make allowances because it's a total waste of resources that can be used for something else. And, you know, people don't realize how big $22 trillion. You stack $100 bills and make it to the moon, and you still have a lot more to stack for the big $22 trillion. So it's just a total waste. I wasn't full with that. Well, I throw it overboard that are alive. I hate throwing that stuff overboard. But for me, you know, if I catch, I've caught three one time, and weigh 40 sometimes, 23 of them, then I want maybe 2 years before you caught another one. And that's the nature of the fishery.
Yeah.
And like I say, we tried to avoid the places that I would catch them because there's hangs on the bottom, you know, when they go. And as far as the numbers being down, I can tell you why a lot of the numbers are down. And cheap char plowers has made everybody a rat fisherman. It used to be it was something that you had to know what you were doing to be a rat fisherman. Now, cheap char plowers is nothing to it. Even I could do it.
All right.
So, you know, I think in the future, like Ken said, this is already to the point that we have no choice.
We have no choice in the mandate having to do the tagging. You know, like I said, we've got some time before we go to public, you know, request for public hearing and the public hearing, you know, the actual public hearing. So, you know, we can see if there's alternative ways to approach this. And we can't guarantee anything. The commission, ASMFC say, no, you have to do it this way. But, I mean, I'm willing to get on the phone with them and see what we can come up with and explain to what we just talked about, you know, the issues we're having.
You know, you're probably talking maybe a couple hundred fish.
Yeah.
Right. What do you need from us? Or did you get enough already?
I mean, right now what we're looking for is just to let you know this is coming down the pipe.
All right.
you know.
Is it illegal for one hook and line person to tag another person's dog?
Yes.
Okay. Unless it's his crew member.
Right. It's going to be like Striped Bass where a hook and line fisherman's crew can tag.
Right.
But it has to be under the licensee.
So if I always got a hook and line number around my dock, I can just say, hey, can you tag this fish? So that way it's
all right. Start that.
Yeah.
Josh?
I got to say.
Oh, Josh. Go ahead.
Say a suggestion here for Jim Dawson, Chinatig. Commercial hook and line fisherman. I was listening to y'all talk, and you know, makes sense that if you've landed X number of pounds, that VMRC should, you know, have that in the historical data, and then, you know, they automatically get these tags. But everybody else to be covered has to declare, and then maybe the fish docks have those tags for those pound nets, gill nets, whatever. Might be a suggestion if they're under a certain amount of pounds that they allow the fish docks to do that. And then you know where we're declaring we've done it and can prove that we've done it from a live standpoint or, you know, poundage standpoint. You all should know that. You have it in the data. And because there's so many fishermen, I just believe that the fish docks, they're not in the live fishery. They're not. That's just all the dead market. So if you're worried about the live market, have us declare that we're going to be live fishing and let the rest handle there. That was my suggestion on that one. Appreciate it.
I think part of the problem is up north in particular, this is so rampant, the illegal fishery, that they could find some fish dock or fish market guys to tag stuff that comes in from, well, they're already finding somebody to buy recreational.
I believe that's why ASMFC said no to the suggestion
already.
Yeah,
this apparently it's really serious up north, so. This is what we got to live with. If we can come up with some greater ideas, that'd be wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Striped bass, rockfish, whatever you care to call them, please.
I always call them striped bass.
All right.
Good afternoon. My name is Alex. I'm a TC representative for Striped Bass. And today I'll be giving you an update on the development of draft addendum 6 by fall 2019. So, give me one second. I don't think this is the actual right presentation. I'm sorry about that. Oh, yeah, I did. I thought you had that folder up. Sorry. I didn't save it in that fact. I saved it in the commission.
Yeah.
All right. Let's try that again. All right. Sorry about that. So background, the stock assessment results were released in November 2018. Those results indicate that the fishery is overfished. That refers to the spawning stock biomass estimate, and that overfishing is occurring. That refers to the fishing mortality rate. Relative to 2017, that's a terminal year in the assessment. That's what's used to assess the status of the fishery, whether it's overfished or overfishing is occurring. Following the release of those results, the board took an immediate action. They implemented the initiation of draft addendum 6 as part of a rebuilding scheme. The projection analysis that was done by the plan development team indicates that at least an 18% reduction in removals. And when I refer to removals, I'm talking about harvest and dead discards to lower the fishing mortality rate. Yes, sir?
Yeah, Alex, you just said that this, because I know I heard it, that the spawning stock is overfished.
That is correct. Yes, so when I say overfished, that's a term that's referring to the spawning stock biomass. And when I refer to overfishing, that's referred to the fishing mortality rate.
Spawning stock, that means the large fish, the spawners, the females.
Spawning stock, yes, those are mature females. So the PDT projected at least an 18% reduction relative to 2017 to lower the fishing mortality rate to the target by 2020, the next year. So the first reference point, fishing mortality, this is the total mortality that occurs on the fishery from fishing practices. So that's harvest. Those are fish that die to release mortality. What we're seeing is ever since about mid to late 1990s, we've seen an increase in the fishing mortality estimate, where in the last 15 years, that fishing mortality estimate has been at the threshold or exceeding the threshold, a level that we really do not want to exceed for the last 15 years. And so in 2017, that estimate was 0.307, significantly higher than what the threshold level is set at right now, which would indicate that the fishery is experiencing overfishing. The other reference point is spawning stock biomass. We've seen that spawning stock biomass kind of hit a plateau around the mid-2000s, and in the last 5 years, we've started to see that kind of decline. It's been below the threshold for the last 5 years. It's continuing to decline. Because it's below that threshold, the status is considered that that fishery is overfished. So this is the motion that the board initiated during the spring ASMSC meeting. The motion was to reduce the harvest, to lower the F back to the target by looking at changes in minimum size limits along the coast, in the Chesapeake Bay, also consider slot limit approaches, consider circle hooks when using bait. We've talked about conservation equivalency quite a bit, and one thing that they've approved is, you know, doing that through season adjustments. And another big part of this addendum is how those adjustments are going to be made. And so really there's two approaches. One is an equal approach where the commercial and the recreational sector will both make an 18% cut on both sides. The other approach is where the commercial sector will take a smaller reduction. In this case, it's a 1.8% reduction in quota. And the recreational sector will take a 20% reduction. And that's based on how those fisheries have been performing in recent years, specifically 2017. So they'll have three options. One is status quo. Under ASMSC management, status quo is always an option. That's always something that's on the table. And then there will be the 18% reduction for both sectors and the smaller percent reduction for the commercial sector that we just talked about. So this is a timeline right now. The next step is that draft addendum 6 will go out for public comment. We have a...
You're behind. It's out.
What's that? Oh, yeah. Well, I'm just trying to explain that we will have public comment here in Virginia. Right, yeah. So I'm sorry. So Max Appleman, the ASMSC coordinator, will come here September 9th, and he will go over the draft addendum 6 and even more detail, and we encourage you to come out, give us your feedback. And in October is when the board will meet and make final action on this addendum for implementation in 2020.
Yeah. Question?
Yeah.
Can you go back one slide?
Sure.
So the A, B, and C are choices?
Yes, sir. Yeah, we'll have three choices. Status quo is always an option on the table, even though that doesn't make the reduction that we're aiming for. And then we'll have an equal approach, and then we'll have a lesser approach, where the commercial sector takes a smaller reduction, but the recreational sector, instead of making an 18% reduction, they'll have to show management options that would make a 20% reduction. The overall goal is to lower the removals by...
Are these ASMSC
yes, sir.
Choices
yes,
or VMRC
yes.
choices?
Yes, these are the three approaches in draft addendum 6 right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a question. Is any commercial fishery in any state not reduced by 25%?
pretty soon.
You're talking about addendum 4?
We were reduced by 25%. Say, I reduced by 25% because they took 25% of my quota. Mm-hmm. What they've done to every commercial fishery on the East Coast.
Yes, that's exactly what they did.
Any state recreational fishery reduced by 25%.
Recreation?
They had to prove status quo. No, we went from 18 to 20. We went from a minimum size, and you're referring to 2015.
That's not the question. The question was, we were required to take a 25% reduction across the board, commercial and recreational. All the commercials met their 25% reduction. The question was, did any recreational, any state meet 25% reduction?
There are
actual numbers, not in paper, but actual numbers. You know, Maryland quota went up. I mean, their quota was static, but their landings were tripled. So they're going to take an 18% reduction from a 300% quota, and you want to take 18% from our 75. So you rewarded the people who caused the problem. You know, I don't know where Virginia is. Virginia's a very small player in this strike pass, just for a recreational lot. You know, landings went up in Virginia, but I think that was just because they changed things with this new survey they have. It made the numbers different. That's the reason it looks like for 15 years it's been overfished, because the number, if we were still under the MRAS numbers, you won't be seeing this. When they changed that, it changed all the recreational fisheries. The catch really went up, not just in striped bass, and a lot of fisheries really went up. So, you know, we've made our 25% reduction. At the recreational sector, Massachusetts is a very big player. Maryland was astronomical. And they're the same fish that you would guess, the ones in Maryland.
Maryland is the biggest problem.
I mean, you know, so we're rewarding people for doing it. The federal government, if this was National Marine Fishery Service or U.S. Fish and Wildlife, they couldn't even begin to do this. They have national standards. They would have to reduce where the problem lies. The problem really lies with hook and release, and basically in two states. This has gone to court. I mean, you know, Virginia can't do it because Virginia has adopted a lot of the Magnuson words, you know, pretty well verbatim by the Magnuson Act is what Virginia has done. And you can't discriminate against user groups. We made our 25%. I'm not saying you need to do anything with them, but I don't think the catch went up. I think the thing actually went down. But it's looking like it went up because they changed the criteria, just like they've changed the numbers on the land, you know, the F was higher. They lowered F. They lowered the threshold. They lowered everything, so that makes it look more so. I'm seeing, and you know, I'm painfully honest, which gets me in trouble a lot of times with people who don't want to hear the stuff that's true. But there's plenty of strike bass of all sizes. I'm still seeing them on little ones. Never saw them in the summer, because, you know, on the seaside, That's something that they're in the Chesapeake Bay. Sea would be the least, I think, least to support. I mean, the most we would. I don't even see where Virginia is not even a player in this on a recreational side. We just have no friends at ASMFC, I suppose. We used to have, you know, straight back has always been kind of a bastard child because we can't pick up any southern boats because it stops at North Carolina. So we lose South Carolina and Georgia and Florida, which typically go with us. So the boat has always been 7-6, basically. New England controls it. We have no say. So, you know, you're going to have a very big turnout, I believe, at this right fast after this season.
And
yeah.
we honestly don't.
Where is the equality in this? If you let states over harvest by 200% and you do nothing with them, and then you come back and take more from us, and we did what was required.
John, did you have a comment?
Virginia's only 3% of the 3% of the catch, coastwide quota. I'm going to agree with them that the other states are the problem. But unfortunately, it's mandated. We have to go through with it at this point. the choices are up there. We may not like the choices, but hopefully our delegates at AMFC will lobby for other actions, particularly as it pertains to Maryland, New York, and New Jersey. Massachusetts, if I'm not mistaken, took some steps the other day with the commercial side of it. I don't know what that is, but we've already had Virginia do a couple of things, more on the way. Massachusetts is behind Virginia in this. I hate it that we might be unilateral in some of those actions, but somebody's got to take leadership, and we have to exert more influence at ASMFC.
No, we do not.
I disagree.
At any time you want, you can argue ASMFC, they'll find you out of compliance. They have no teeth. They can do nothing. It's up to the Secretary of Commerce to do it. New Jersey actually did something that definitely was out of the norm. And ASMFC found them out of compliance, and the Secretary Ross said no.
True.
So this is something that, you know, it's so blatant. We made our 25% reduction. Now they want to come back and it's like we were talking about the 14 and 16 and a half inch flounder. A lot of it is jealousy. You know, we made our reduction. If you made your reduction, I wouldn't think you should have to pay for me. And in Virginia, I don't think actually, I think recreational catch was down in Virginia. But Rob sent me the numbers and he sent them to everybody and we've never discussed them. Do you have them?
No, I don't have them for this presentation.
Well, you know, that's the problem with the Memphis now. Used to be the place with that. And you have all the commercial people. Now we very seldom discuss commercial problems. And until it gets to this point, shut down our throat. All along, we've always been proactive on a lot of things, and that's the way to do things. Get in front of the curve. Do things proactively. We're reacting to this. You know, right now, I'm going to make a request to you, and I'll call Steve Bowman tomorrow. I want a formal hearing when this comes in front of the commission. You know, we're going to cross-examine people, and you're going to have those numbers, I hope, because they're going to be requested of you. Whoever gives a presentation, you're going to have to give the numbers, showing that the state's all exceeded the recreational quota by sometimes high as several 100%. And they're not being, if we hadn't made our 25%, you would have took that off of us the following year. If we went over our quota by 100%, you would close the fishery down the next year on the commercial side. That's just the way it would have been. We went over one time on the recreational side. I've said this before. 100 and some times, they made us pay that back. Out of 180 some times, we had to go pay. And the same year, the recreational went over 1.1 million. In the state of Virginia. But they didn't exceed the Bay White quota, because we were under a different system, and as long as the Bay White quota wasn't exceeded, it didn't have to pay back. Well, we were the ocean, so we had to pay it back, because we were under a different system. But, you know, that's where we're on this. You know, it's not fair to, we did our 25%. Everybody on the coast on the commercial side did their 25%. There's no question it was done. There's no question that the recreational, if it just stayed status quo, we would have been in excellent shape right now if it had stayed. But the fact is, it really is just ballooning.
Part of the reason that third option is up there is because there is recognition that the commercial side took the cut. That's why the third option is there.
It has to do, it has to do with the performance in 2017. So the last year's assessment was 2017. It showed that 10% of the removals coast-wide. So everything's looking at removals altogether, so harvest and dead discards in both sectors. 10% of the coastwide removals came from the commercial fishery, while 90% of the coastwide removals came from the recreational fishery. So this is a way of holding the commercial fishery responsible for their contribution to the total removals that came in 2017, rather than make
them
make
it. We made our contribution. We did our 25%. They did not do 25%. So, you know, we made our contribution. If you paid your income tax, and I paid my income tax, and Scott decided he's not paying his.
Right. And I think what happened is, you know, we are dealing with new MRIP estimates, here. And so that in 2015, if we look at the fishing mortality estimate, that's when we had to do that. But we have been at it or above it in the last 15 years.
And if you will go back further into that, you go back into the 90s and stuff, you will soon find out that the commercial fishery was 15% of the fishery. We've been throttled back all along while the other hasn't. So we've already lost 50% of the fishery's gone. And the 10% including, they're giving us a 25% discard mortality rate, which doesn't exist. But it's just, you know, they don't have a number. So that's the number they picked. On the recreational side, they picked 8%. But they know through studies in Maryland that on Susquehanna Flat, it was close to 100% mortality that will have been released in the summertime in the water with warm and low swimming in it. But that's something we've seen numerous times. We haven't seen it lately. But like I said, I've been doing this a long time, so we have seen all that stuff. We know that's a problem. So, you know, it's not treating anybody fairly when you make somebody give up 25%, then you come back for 18 more, then you let somebody go up 150%.
Yeah, well, we did. We went up from 18 inches to 20 inches. Now, there was a lot of uncertainty with that. The estimates showed that that would achieve, you know, the reduction that we were being required, we were being asked of, but we had that really strong 2000. From what I remember, I wasn't here, but the 11-year class was very strong. Was coming through, and that was something that was very difficult to predict, and there were a lot more discards than estimated. And that, from the Bay-wide perspective, that's what really contributed to the overestimate that you're referring to from the Bay-wide states, yeah, recreationally.
There have been years when Massachusetts alone discard mortality exceeded the whole East Coast commercial catch, including discards. Just that one state discard mortality, like I say, you know.
Well, that's what you have now. Maryland's discards exceed Virginia's total harvest.
That's right.
And, you know, I don't think Virginia has the problem the other states do, because just like Rob told us at the last meeting or the one before, close season was off the table. Because he mentioned it that Rob Beal and stuff, and he said no. Because that was the only thing you could do, really. To do something would be close the season, for example, in Maryland and Massachusetts when you're having high mortality rates and not allow a fishery, but they're not going to vote for that.
Closed seasons are going to be left up to the individual states in computing their conservational equivalents.
We have no conservation. That would be part of the recreational.
Yeah.
We have no conservation. We have to go to 18%.
We have conservation equivalency for commercial as well.
On straight bass, what Rob told me not, maybe we need to call Rob, because he said it was a straight 18%. He said 60%.
Everything in the addendum at this point for commercial is quota. It's either a 1.8% or 18% adjustment.
It's probably going to have to be a quota cut, but it's how we address that quota cut. I mean, obviously, a 1.8% commercial quota cut is, you know, would be more favorable than 18%.
Was there more?
Oh yeah,
there's a whole lot.
And a lot more. So I'm
at 1.8, using ASMFC's figures, at the 1.8% reduction, the commercial quota in Virginia will still be larger than what the 2017 harvest was.
I have those numbers.
I beg your pardon?
No, I have those numbers. I have it in the slide. We'll be looking at that.
That's in the addendum.
I believe we harvest our entire ocean quota.
Not according to... Okay. I won't argue the ocean quota. I was looking at total.
I believe we do harvest it.
So these are... I'm not going to go in each option by option, but these are the options under an equal approach for the recreational fishery. Some examples are for the coastal, a 35-inch minimum coast-wide. That would achieve an 18% reduction. A 32 to 40-inch slot. These are options that would achieve at least an 18% reduction on the coast. For the Chesapeake Bay, example is an 18-inch minimum under a one-fish possession limit or a two-fish possession limit under a 20 to 24-inch slot. So there will be a suite of recreational options under an equal approach. and there will be a suite of options under the less approach for the commercial and a slightly higher reduction being asked for the recreational to achieve a 20%. So this is 18%. These are the options that are in the draft addendum for 20%. That would achieve at least 20%. And that draft addendum is available online. And during the public hearing, Max will go over these options as well.
Can you go back?
Yep.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
I mean, I understand, you know, that the top section, C1, 2, and 3 is for Coast. C4 to 9 is Chesapeake Bay and includes all three jurisdictions.
Correct.
Before D.C. Are these ASMSC?
Yes, these are all ASMSC.
Are these to be selected by, you know,
yes.
voted on by?
Yes. What they will do is when they meet in October, they will agree on approach. And then from that approach, they will have a list. So let's say they go with the equal approach. They will have these options to choose from recreationally for the coast and the bay. And then it would be an 18% reduction in quota for the commercial fishery.
So if I'm sitting in the audience and I'm a charter boat captain,
mm-hmm.
And I, what am I supposed to think and say on this today?
Well, I would say review these options that are online, submit public comment, come, you know, voice your opinion at these meetings and make your, you know, your organization and your voice heard. Because all of that is going to go into public comment for review by the board in October.
I'm very confused.
There are a lot of options. There's really just, I mean, there's two approaches. It's the recreational makes an 18.
So does this committee select and vote, you know, on an option and present that to the VMRC commission? Or what do we do with these?
There's an option that you prefer. If there's one that you want, then you can make a motion.
These are the options that were put out by ASMFC to coastwide everybody. They are looking for comments back to ASMFC on these options. They're taking public comment, written comment, through the end of September. When they meet in October, they will, based on public comment, based on what happens in the other states, not just in Virginia, they will select which of these will apply. And then that will be put out as part of the final addendum for all the states to follow. We in Virginia, will whatever that option is that is selected, we'll have to implement it or go back to them with some conservational equivalency as to if it's different as to how we will get to that 18% reduction or 20%, whichever one is selected.
Or
1.8? That's for the commercial.
That's for the commercial side. On the recreational side, it's either going to be 18 or 20. We have to reduce mortality either 18 or 20%.
So what's VMRC's role if ASMFC is looking for public comment?
He's simply telling us this is what's going on.
So what's V?
I believe at the moment our options are A, B, and C. That's what they want, and then once they decide whether it's A, B, or C that they're going to do,
right.
And they come up with
once
these
they
other
make,
options.
In October, once they make that decision, if we're satisfied with that decision, that's what we'll move forward with. If it's something that we say, no, that's not something we want to implement in Virginia, that's when we'll come back to them with a conservation equivalency proposal saying, this is not in the draft addendum 6, but it's still going to achieve the 18% or the 20% reduction. And it gives us some flexibility.
Tonight, we're going to take a vote on ABC?
No, we're not
going to
vote on it.
No, it's just to inform you of the options that are available and, you know, you can submit public comment to the board.
The ASMFC is holding a public hearing here on September...
September 9th at 6:30.
They have another one in Colonial Beach the following night for the public. You and I or anybody else that wants to go and tell them what our preferences are on that.
So, but we as a FMAC group
I'm not going to do anything tonight but listen to Alex tell us what's going on.
Is the SMSC going to go over all this?
This is a non-discussion.
Absolutely, Matt. Yeah, absolutely. You're going to go through all the every part of the addendum in detail.
So we can skip this tonight and then come back for that one and learn all about it then.
Yep.
Basically, we're going to have to go through all this again. So we could cut this short. Move on to something else.
When you say the same as 2017, for example, in options C, 1, 2, and 3,
mm-hmm.
for the season and the bag limit.
That's true. So
is there a season? And some states, we had one fish bag limit in the ocean, but some states still had two, didn't they? The preferred option was everybody go to one, but then they let them do slot limits and stuff. And some states get two, I believe.
Yeah, so we don't have, so we eliminated the trophy, that's referring to the trophy season. We don't have a trophy season anymore. That's referring to other states that have the trophy fishery. They would still be able to continue.
That's a coastwide option on top, not just Virginia.
Oh, that is coast, that's coastwide.
Like Virginia does have a one fish, 28 inch minimum.
That's correct.
And they did away with the trophy season, which was more symbolic than anything. But it actually achieved that because there was far less people fishing on last day. It really got so there was a lot of people on Aztec Beach surf fishing for them, and this year with nowhere near as many. But, you know, by saying the same in 2017, that's going to hold Virginia to one fish and still allow some other state that has two fish to keep two fish. If they had they modified the top line, they got into conservation of other states.
I mean, I'm not sure what states along, you know, in the on the coast have two fish.
Yeah, I don't think any of the states came back with two fish in the
ocean. So they were talking about it at first when we discussed it several years ago.
I can't think of any states that mean that. The further north you go, it's almost all one fish.
Okay, I mean, often you know,
because Massachusetts
was like they want this question. But anyway, you know, they give you a preferred option. So some of this stuff is already a preferred option for them, and when they come to this meeting on summer tonight, they're going to give you options, but one of them's going to say preferred option. They always have everyone I've been to, so they already have a preference somewhere. Do you know what their preference is?
I don't know. I don't know what their preference is.
The TC may chime in and give a recommendation, but that's not always the case, but they could.
Yeah, I don't even think we have a recommendation.
They always have status quo as an option on everything, and then it's usually a preferred option and then several other options.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just don't want to say Virginia gets stuck with one fish and other states keep having two because they have a slot limit not letting us change.
So another part of that motion was to talk about the mandating of circle hooks. So there will be three approaches. One is status quo, where it's just recommended that we promote circle hooks. Option B is where it's mandated, where you actually have to show that you have to use circle hooks when using bait, fishing recreationally. And the third option is that it's required that you promote circle hooks through outreach. And what we've done is, I'll give an example. If we received 3,000 circle hooks from funding for the next. We plan on giving those away to some of our MRIP staff, giving them away at different events just to promote, to kind of take steps right now to promote that. So in October, they will vote on which option to move forward with.
Is this going to delineate between offset and non-offset?
Yes, it's non-offset.
Thank you.
Yeah, ASMSC. Right, yeah, so ASMSC defines circle hooks as non-offset. So these are inline or non-offset circle hooks.
I mean, I know the physical characteristics different between offset and non-offset. Is there one reason one is better than the other?
Offset will not even be a circle hook. If it's offset, it will not even be a circle hook.
And that one is
offset. From the studies that I've read, the non-offset hooks are more likely to position themselves in the corner of the jaw, whereas an offset hook, there is still the possibility of a gut hook or being hooked through the leg.
So you're
that was a general consensus amongst the TC, the same hooks. Thing. Yep. It's offset, the non-offset would actually do a better job of not gut hooking fish.
Excuse me for blurting that, I apologize.
So you were right. Okay. You were right.
And so this is the table I was referring to before. Depending on which approach the board votes on, there will be three options for the commercial sector right now. As laid out in draft addendum 6, there will either be status quo, there will be an 18% reduction in quota, or a 1.8% reduction in quota. In Virginia, the table is highlighted in red, so it just shows the difference under each scenario for the Chesapeake Bay and the coastal fishery.
That chart, that chart just reiterated the point earlier that the 1.8% reduction on the commercial side would be less than the 2000, excuse me, would still be greater than the 2017 harvest, total harvest. But to Ernie's point, I don't know what the breakdown is
on the ocean,
versus.
I have.
1.8% would be a 1.8% reduction because we add 138,640.
Okay.
Let me see if I have that. I have that in a later slide. It shows you what the commercial harvest was in percentage for the coast and the bay. And so we've gone over a little bit of conservation equivalency. It's just really to give us flexibility. If the option is chosen that we don't feel is right for our state, we've had four meetings. We've kind of gone over some examples of conservation equivalent measures. And so I want to kind of change the page, and talk about recent trends in Virginia's recreational fishery, and also go over the commercial fishery as well. Did you have a question?
I'll take your question first.
A number, two meetings ago here, I had done a lot of research on how we could achieve conservation equivalency with gillnet mesh size to protect the large spawning females, which you had said, and I'd already asked tonight, the goal is to protect the spawning stock biomass.
That is part. So spawning. So this addendum is all about addressing overfishing. It's a very quick. It takes less than a year, and that's all about lowering the fishing mortality rate to the target by 2020. And it's not spawning stock biomass is part of this stock assessment, but that's going to be addressed later through an amendment process, which is a much longer process. So yes, it is important. Yes, the fishery is overfished, which is refers to the spawning stock biomass, but this entire addendum is really focused on numbers of fish, lowering the harvest in terms of numbers of fish.
And what, is it possible that it was a little misleading in the beginning here, because I interrupted and said, is your goal to protect the SSB? And you said yes. But the goal is to protect the whole fishery right now and not specifically the SSB, the spawning stock biomass.
This addendum is all about reducing the fishing mortality on the stock to a
lower point.
Yeah.
All right.
Just the addendum was done as quickly as possible. The addendum is triage. We're bleeding, things are bleeding. We need to treat it as quickly as possible. And that's to lower the fishing mortality. And that's what this 18% is. The amendment will deal with the spawning stock biomass.
If there is an amendment.
Through an amendment, which is a longer process. We can end, we can reduce the fishing mortality relatively quickly. We can't rebuild the stock overnight. That's going to take a number of years. So, and that's the way I've been telling everybody. It's like, the amendment is, a triage, try to get this thing moving as quickly as possible, there'll be an amendment.
The addendum is triage.
Hmm?
The addendum is triage.
The addendum, I'm sorry. Yeah, the addendum is triage, and then there'll be an amendment later that will deal with the spawning stock.
Okay, then part two of my question is the commission going to have a vote on the options for Virginia?
Is the commission? Yes.
Before ASMFC comes here.
Before ASMFC comes here,
yeah.
We will sit down and we will decide how we're going to vote before we go to the meeting.
Okay, how does this committee input to that?
You can provide your input to us. You can send the same letter. If you send a letter to ASMFC, send us the same letter.
So I can speak as an individual, but how does this committee submit their opinion, you know, our voted on opinion to the committee.
If the committee has an opinion, they can provide it.
I want you to realize that most of the open fishing that's current in Maryland are the small fish.
Yeah. Agreed.
They are not big fish. They're small fish. They're being overfished so severely.
Yeah. Agreed.
In the state of Maryland and Massachusetts, they are not.
It's the big fish right
there. They're big fish, but in Maryland.
Is there any reason why a choice was made to not let this committee vote on our opinion on any of the options? Especially since we have half a dozen charter boat guys that came here today, which represent a big part of Virginia's charter boat fleet.
This committee serves as an advisory committee to the staff and to the board and to the commission itself. I mean, we take all the comments that we get and we form a decision based on that. Now, I believe if the committee wants to have a single say, they can do that.
We can actually vote on stuff, and then they'll say the committee voted for. It can be overwhelming. It can.
Yeah.
You know, so we could at least vote on A, B, C, A, B, or C.
If you want to spend your time doing that,
just call up individually.
You could do that too. I mean, it's an open public system where, you know, everybody's opinion, you know, public comment is brought forward. If you can all get together on a conference call that we can set up, or send your information to Jeff, and Jeff can collate it and send it to us.
All right. The commission has asked me to appear tomorrow to comment on what we talked about tonight. What are they looking for in particular?
We're going to get to that.
You will get to that.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
And anytime you want to comment on anything like that, you can go to the commission, usually right after lunch. They have an open forum. You can comment on anything you want to. You can still call it. You can walk through there, and then you can discuss whatever you want to discuss. And if they see merit in it, they go ask questions and stuff. And if they see merit in it, at the end of the formal agenda, then they take action on whatever you request.
Right.
So there's always an option for you.
Thank you.
All right. So when taking a closer look at our recreational fishery, the blue bars are the recreational directed trips for striped bass. The blue bars are for the harvest, and CPUE, or pounds per trip, or harvest per trip, is in the dotted orange line. And what we're seeing is a decline in harvest. Now, that's expected when you see declines in effort, the number of directed trips for striped bass. But what's kind of alarming is the decline, not in just harvest and effort, but also CPUE. So even if effort goes down, you expect harvest to go down, but you would expect CPUE, pounds per trip, or harvest per trip, to remain relatively stable. But it's also declining, which is somewhat of a red flag, and it shows that we're kind of headed somewhere that we don't want to go. 2018 was the lowest harvest estimate recreationally that we've seen since the moratorium. So it's very, very low, and it shows that it's continuing to decline. So this is a table that shows the recreational harvest of striped bass specific to the Chesapeake Bay in terms of numbers of fish and pounds. The third column, harvest percent relative to 2018, just compares that estimate in that year compared to 2018. So we see a plateau right around, looks about 2006, 2007, it dips down and comes back up 2009. After 2009, we start seeing it decline. So where 2018 is about a 90 to 92%, both in harvest and numbers of fish and pounds, decrease. From there, it's right around that 70 to 80% of what it was. It's there's no doubt that the harvest in the fishery is declining. When we look at the ocean fishery, we used to have a pretty vibrant ocean fishery right around Cape Henry, the ocean front. Since about 2013, it's disappeared. You just don't see those fish anymore. There was a little blip in 2017, 98 fish. I mean, really nothing. North Carolina's seen the same thing. Really no harvest in the last, you know, 5-7 years. So we can't really compare the percentage to zero there, but you don't really have to. We just don't harvest any coastal fish anymore. This is an interesting figure. It just shows the ranking of Virginia compared to all the other states. Virginia is the blue bar. All the other states are orange. We used to be the number one state in terms of harvest, definitely the top three all the way to about 2004. We dropped down to about fifth, but for the most part, we're at least the top five all the way to 2010, and then we declined. We're in about 2017, 18, we're fifth or sixth. So we're just not harvesting as many striped bass as historically that we used to.
If I may?
Yes.
How much of that is due to regulation changes? I know we've been pretty aggressive on regulations.
Right. I mean, the last major change we had, all the bay jurisdictions had to make was in 2015. Mm-hmm. We went from 18 to 20 inches. But for the most part, a lot of the states had to make some sort of change that would show a similar reduction. We used to be top three, number one for a long time, but not anymore. So looking at the commercial fishery, the commercial fishery is a little different because it's an ITQ system. What we see is that in the Chesapeake Bay, for the most part, on average, 2009-2018, they achieve about 86% of their quota. There really is no trend looking year to year. It looks like it jumps around from a low of 77% 2017, and the highest is about 93% 2012. It's pretty variable, but right around 86%. Coastal fishery is a little bit better. I mean, they achieve about 91% on average. Low 75% 2009. I think in 2016 we had a slight overage. But for the most part, they do a pretty good job of achieving that quota. And we don't really see it. I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's okay, we have one question.
I just want to tell you that, I've said this two meetings ago, Maryland and Virginia on their commercial side achieve 100% of their commercial quota. And they do that with the difference in gill net mesh size. And we don't do that in, as you can see by our numbers on our Chesapeake Bay, it's a previous slide, 89% last year. So we have fish to catch, and I believe that it has to do with inside the bay, not the ocean quota, with our gill net mesh size.
The gill net mesh size is keeping them from keeping their quota?
If two other jurisdictions that shared the same fish that came through our area are catching 100%, and they have a single mesh gill size of seven inch mesh, and they catch an average fish that's larger than ours, that at least should tell us something. And I'm not, it's just a comment. That's
mm-hmm.
all.
Okay.
When did we go with the ITQ in Virginia?
Where's Rob? He'll tell you.
I don't recall off the top of my head.
We really don't have an ITQ. It's kind of a hybrid.
Yeah.
But the original system was tag-based quota.
Right, and that's why we came to you and we looked at like the average weights, and that was brought up as a bias. And we had a tag-based system where people were tagging,
We had a tag-based system, and it just took the average weight of all the fish.
Right, and that's why we didn't.
Somebody like me, they caught bigger fish in the ocean, and when I got 400 tags, my tags would work for a whole lot more than your 400 if you were up the river, because you would be catching small fish, because that's
right.
Probably in there in the winter. And I really pushed real hard to go to the ITQ.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, we've kind of got a hybrid ITQ. The ITQ is based on traditional, how much claim is a person has. We didn't do that. We just went ahead and whacked it up for sectors. The gillnet sector was X amount, and anybody in there, I was number one or two on the landings for that time period. But somebody who was number 200 got the exact same quota I got. And when we did the ocean quota, first we did two quotas together because they allowed us to allow the boys from Virginia Beach to get either fish in the ocean or the bay. And we didn't realize it at the time, but we actually gave up our ocean quota for to allow them to land from either jurisdiction.
And when we change them over, we change them over probably about 2002 or 3, I would say. The original system started in the, when we first went back, the quota was nothing. Like 100,000 pounds, and they caught every bit of it on the James River and ended up throwing a lot of them in the trash because the fish were abundant, the quota was low, people put out gear and they caught way more than the quota would allow, so they couldn't sell them without a short. So I say we've had the ITQ probably for 15 years, at least 10.
All right, thank you. Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's fine. And so, so that gets us to the point, you know, following the results of the stock assessment, which indicates that stock is overfished, overfishing is occurring, rapid declines in our recreational fishery, I mean, the lowest estimate we've seen since the moratorium, a season that is soon approaching, it's, you know, the agency plan to be proactive about this, not wait for the process to unfold. When we have something right in front of us, when we can take action now and be proactive about it. And so we will have an emergency action tomorrow during the commission meeting, and that will be to lower the recreational possession limit from 2 striped bass to 1 striped bass in the Chesapeake Bay area. This will not modify the season dates that we have now. We have one of the shortest seasons in the jurisdiction recreationally. This will keep the possession limit at 1. This will achieve the required reduction being asked for us from ASMSC under both approaches, regardless of which approach you go for. In addition, we will be also implementing a 36-inch recreational maximum size limit for the Chesapeake Bay fall, Potomac River tributary summer fall, and coastal season. We know that an amendment is almost certain. It was brought up during the last ASMSC meeting, and it was postponed for the spring meeting in 2020. So we know spawning stock biomass is going to be addressed. The savings are low. I mean, it is minimal. However, we do know that MRIP did not intercept as many striped bass, large striped bass that are being harvested. We know that from citation data. We know that from social media. We know that from being out in the water ourselves. So this is an additional conservation effort to protect the spawning stock biomass that we will be soon addressing this year. Now for the commercial fishery, we will be, as part of the emergency action, we'll also be implementing a maximum gill net mesh size requirement for the Chesapeake Bay. It will be a 7-inch maximum mesh, and it will be a 9-inch maximum mesh on the coast. We do not have any maximum gill net mesh size requirements right now, the Chesapeake Bay or the coastal area. Maryland, PRC, they have a 7-inch max mesh. This will just further complement those states as well.
Is that for 2020?
This is for 2019.
So
this is for tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll have an emergency action where we present this to the commission for them to vote on, which will take place immediately, be effective for 30 days. The commission will come back after those 30 days and then vote on it again.
So if somebody has not completed their caught all of their Virginia quota yet?
No, it won't be. I'm sorry, go ahead. I probably jumped the gun there.
If somebody has not caught all their Virginia quota yet and they want to fish this fall to finish their quota, the maximum size gill net they can use is 7?
That's correct.
Okay.
You're asking this for an emergency measure?
This is for emergency action at this tomorrow commission meeting.
Tomorrow. I mean, it's the first I've heard of it.
That's not right.
And so this is an...
I didn't do anything wrong. All those things that he had up there, there was one time that we went over. Combined, we go over. We're getting penalized. Virginia needs to stand up for its rights.
So this is an alternative to putting like a maximum size limit that we see in the recreational sector. A maximum size limit would just further, you know, result in dead discards or you know, not utilizing that resource appropriately. In addition, there will be quota adjustments, whether that's 1.8% or 18%, we don't know. That will be up for the board's decision in October.
It's, guys have their gear already hung. You can't, it's not, they'd have to order it, rehang their gear. You know, I thought this would go into effect for next fishing season, but to implement it right away, if guys don't have that size mesh, and all of a sudden there's going to be a big rush on 7-inch, you got guys that might not be able to get gear to catch their quota this fall. I mean, that's kind of quick.
Right, right. We understand that.
That can be brought up to the commission and it's potentially addressed, but you know, the action has to take place within 30 days.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I think it was probably kept under the hat because you didn't want a big turnout tomorrow, and you would have had one.
Well,
8 inches is about the popular size of that in Virginia.
The reason we tossed this back and forth because instead of going through our normal process of a public, you know, request for a public hearing and then doing the public hearing the next month, is that if we did that, literally the, you know, what would happen is the fishery people would have 9 days, because our meeting's September 27th, they'd have 9 days to be able to react. And, you know, so by doing this as an emergency order, they'll have 37 days before the final say goes into play, which will be at that meeting. So
yeah, it's not as bad now because people, you're not catching straight now.
Yeah.
So you can really plan on having a lot of people there when you try to make it a permanent amendment, because you know you can sneak it under the rug one time, but you're not going to do it once the news gets out.
I can't speak for my commercial counterparts. I can tell you on the recreational side, we've been running a poll on emergency action, and it's running about 80% in favor of supporting it. So I'm going to say I support that from a recreational perspective.
Right. I mean, you know, most commercial people would support closing down the striped bass fishery recreational because of the fiscal mortality rate. And that's because, you know, we see that as a big problem, and they see that as a big problem. So you're going to have that animosity between groups.
I made my statement so as not to promote any animosity. I support the recreational part of this.
Right.
And to let you know, this is from an agency point of view. This is, you know, everybody sitting here, Rob, the commissioner, the deputy commissioner, and the secretary were involved. We had, you know, conversations as late as, you know, last Friday discussing this.
Will this affect our total that we are used when they penalize us in the future? Are they going to go back to before we did this and use that as our landings number that we have to reduce from? Or are they going to go back to after this comes out?
By making this adjustment, we will achieve what they're asking, regardless of what approach. And now, later on, if they go back and say, well, cuts need to be taken from, you know, 2020 when everyone did this, we will, from a TC's perspective, I will make sure to say that, hey, we did this in 2019, not 2020, as a proactive measure ahead of the whole ASMSC process. So we're going to be evaluated against this year, not 2020. So that's really up to us to make sure that that happens the way it needs to happen.
That was my question.
I have a question as to both committee members, to John. When I first saw this request for emergency action, I spread the word around because I had no idea that we were going to be doing something for this year. But what I didn't know again until tonight, after that packet I was sent earlier, was the 36-inch maximum was back on the table. So that's been added since I got my package. And so your poll, I doubt your poll included the 36-inch maximum.
I have to go back and I'm not trying to evade it. I don't remember if the 36 was on the poll or not. It's just that there would be action. I'd have to go back and look.
All right, well, that's something that needs to be spread around, because I've got between now and tomorrow morning, this is a morning on the agenda, that I would like some direction from the recreational
committee. I plan to be there tomorrow.
And Mr. Bellis, I think you were the one pointing out that, you know, Virginia needs to be a leader. in this whole process, and that's what we're trying to
do.
Well,
I hate to see us do things unilaterally, but it's also good to see us taking a leadership position. Yeah. So,
and we will fight, you know, for the credit we get for this. We will fight, you know, we will make sure this credit goes against.
Virginia is not the issue when it comes to ASMSC.
Agreed, but we will still have to take, you know, we all know we have to take some cuts.
Yes. The mesh size restriction and the 18% high.
Right. And so, in summary, for tomorrow, what will be included on that emergency action is the lowering in the recreational possession limit from 2 to 1 striped bass, the 36-inch maximum size limit, establishing a 7-inch maximum mesh size in the Chesapeake Bay, and a 9-inch max on the coastal. For the public hearing in November, we'll also be implementing a 28-inch commercial maximum size limit in the Chesapeake Bay area from March 15th to June 15th. Right now, it's March 26th to June 15th is a 28-inch maximum size limit. Information from our sampling indicate that a large majority of striped bass are caught during that time, and that would just ensure that we have more conservation towards those large fish. This is historically something that's been in place before. I believe it was in the late 90s. I was told that this date was set and was already established. And then we'll also have a 36-inch maximum size limit in the Potomac River from January 16th to June 15th, just to complement the maximum size limits that are already in place for the main stem of the Potomac River. Just to make sure that that's not a law enforcement issue as well, and it's well understood. And so that's what's on the table for tomorrow, and what's in blue is something that we'll be discussing during the public hearing in November.
Would you have to have that in print?
Yeah, can we copy that?
I would
like
to get some people.
Yep, we can do that.
All right, we'd like all my copies. I had a question. We'll go with John first.
Back to Ken Neal's point, I just checked, Ken. I did not have the maximum size in there. We just said that we'd reduce the maximum size. The current numbers are running 77% in favor of. Did not have the 36-inch max, just said large fish.
I can hear Chris's bait and tackle yelling from the Eastern Shore right now.
Mike?
Clarification on the first bullet up there. Lower the recreational and charter boat limit from 2 fish to 1 for this fall and next spring?
That's correct.
Boy, you just about put charter boat guys out of business. I mean, why would I pay $660 and go out and catch 1 fish?
Right.
I won't do it.
Right. Well, the options that are in the addendum right now, every angler is different, but if you look at those options, the slots are, I just want to make this point, are extremely narrow.
What happened with the idea of cutting days off the season?
You would 85% of our harvest occurs in November and December. You would have to cut, if you start from the beginning, you would have to take the entire Chesapeake Bay spring season out, all of October, and start it almost in November, just to have a season to make it.
I like that.
Can we speak to him there?
I
have information to talk about. A lot of us getting by, we have comments. We wait to the end of it. When do we get a chance to talk to someone?
As soon as he's through with his presentation, and I ask one question, and we see if there's any other questions from the table. This will do away with tournaments, I take it?
If the tournament is not a catch-and-release tournament, and the tournament is the largest fish, and it's greater than, you know, yes, it will. It will get rid of tournaments. Now, if they want to have a catch-and-release tournament,
then... want to discourage catch-and-release. Yeah. That's what a problem is.
Yeah.
Well, right. This is... If the harvest is greater than 36 inches in tournament, then they won't be a tournament for that. I mean,
largest fish
It may be a measure. I mean, like kayak tournaments, everyone, during kayak tournaments, they have those all the time where they're provided with a board, and it's the longest fish. You take a picture of it, and then that's how that tournament operates. So.
All right. Anything else from the committee?
I'm sorry. No, I was just going to say
that. Basically, closes the charter boat fishery. Nobody's on charter a boat and they're only allowed one fish and can't keep anything 36 inches, so the charter boat fishery's done. Or strike bass.
They can go up to Massachusetts and New Jersey and all up there.
You think with people?
Yeah, we're out there. The guys that are up the bay, I mean, they don't come down. All my guys, if any of them do it, they go up to at least Cape Charles or further up to.
That concludes my presentation. From us, you know, we're asking for support with this, you know, but if there is not support with this is something, you know, we will, when I do my presentation tomorrow, it's a very similar presentation, I'll be including FMAC's recommendations or their thoughts on this as well.
All right. The audience, just so please, with your hand up. Come up, give us your name and do you represent if anybody?
Y'all hear me good? All right. My name's Ryan Rogers. I run a charter boat Midnight Sun out of Smith Point Marina in Rudy Inlet in the summertime. And I'm on the Fin Fish Commission, Advisory Commission in the Potomac River. And first and foremost, before I get going, I'm probably going to make some comparisons between recreational and commercial. And I want everybody to know that I'm not anti-commercial. I don't have one anti-commercial bone in my body. My family's commercial fishermen. I'm a commercial fisherman. So I'm going to make comparisons, but I'm not throwing jabs at anybody. Secondly, I came here with an open mind, you know, wanting to speak and pretty much knowing whatever I said probably wouldn't make much difference. But now I'm just mad. You know, I'm looking at this. Y'all made a comment. You've just put charter boats out of business. My people come down, they rent motel rooms, they eat in restaurants, they go to Food Lion and buy sandwiches and all the stuff for their trips, and they're not going home with two fillets. It's not happening. So, you know, you've just pretty much in this. I also want to talk about real numbers. This political thing, cutting our trophy season out, there were 65 fish caught in 2018 trophy season in Virginia. So after, it was about April 3rd, the email went out, after the commercial season was over, where tons and tons of pre-spawn fish were caught, y'all said you cannot keep your one per person in the spring trophy season in Virginia. So I've not caught a trophy fish in Virginia in the spring for 10 years. I've not caught a single fish in the spring, rockfish, in Virginia in over 6 years. I have to move my boat up the Potomac River every year to catch rockfish for my customers. So these numbers and all, I mean, the fishery is kind of dictating which way this is going. And, yes, there is a decline. And, you know, you start talking about dead discards. I mean, 48 or 42% dead discards? When we don't catch a first fish in Virginia till damn near October 15th, when the water's about 60 degrees, I mean, we need to come up with real numbers. And like Jim said, and I forget which one up here said, we need to stand up for Virginia when it comes to this Atlantic States Fishery Commission, because we are the redhead stepchild. They think all these fish come in our bay to spawn, you know, they think that anything we do is hurting their fish that they get in summertime. They're catching all these big fish in summertime. I'd like to show you the amount of numbers of big fish I catch per season the last 3 years versus what I caught in 05, 06, 07, 08. It's pitiful. It's just pitiful. And I just hope when it comes up for this emergency meeting or hearing tomorrow, whatever, that y'all stand up for us and make the comments that I'm making now about one fish per person or 22-inch maximum. If they really cared about the fish and not the numbers, they would let us keep our 2 18-inch fish and carry our customers home. Do you know, and just say a season comes in October 5th, Do you know how many fish we would have to kill to keep one 22-inch fish? We don't have them. And whether it be climate change, environment, like when you looked at that number for 2018, how low that was, did they take into account that that was record rainfall that we've had? That how much environment plays into this also? I mean, I want to talk about real numbers in real life. It's just, I don't know. I hope when it comes down to it, the vote, that they do the right thing, y'all do the right thing and recommend something that's going to work for everybody, not just make their numbers work. Like I said, my people aren't coming down. No, you know, you might as well cut the charter boat business out. And really, that's all I got to say. I just hope y'all stand up. Y'all are our voice, you know, Finfish. I hope y'all stand up for us and what's right.
I understand. Thank you.
Just for the record, the dead discards in Virginia, less than 4%.
Well, on the Potomac River website, it says that recreational fishermen take 90% of the fish. And that we're talking about the Bay jurisdiction, not just Potomac River, Maryland. Recreational fishermen take 90% of the fish. 42% is dead discard.
I think the 90-10 is coast-wide for the whole coast of the Atlantic coast, from Maine to North Carolina.
The way I read it on the website.
And the dead discards, they're very high in Maryland. The dead discards are 25 to 30%.
We can't just keep fishing Virginia in the summer, never have one.
Right. I mean, our dead discards in this state are, we're ninth of the 11 states. We're doing a very good job with our dead discards.
Yeah, we don't have anything to discard most of the time.
Yes, sir. Please come up and tell us your name and who you are. Who you with?
I didn't plan on speaking when I come. I'm David Fisher. Run a charter boat to Heritage in out of Reedville, Virginia, and I have since 1999. Just to give you a little bit of background about myself, I started in the business in 1985. I've been in it ever since. It is my occupation. I also To make ends meet, I have a second full-time job. I also farm. And all throughout the last however many years that's been since 85, I have also on and off commercial fished as a helping hand in the gill netting as well as pound netting. So just like what Ryan said, I feel the same way. So often the recreational guys are pried against the commercial guys. It seems like there's something in there where the two can't have a level playing field. Something has to be taken from one for the other one to get ahead. And I think there's enough room out there for all of us to make a living. And that's one thing I want y'all to think about when you're making these decisions here, because there's a lot here I'd like to say. I'm not really good at this public speaking, but it does hurt me listening to some of the comments there when I heard something about, the 1.8 is a little more palatable than the 18%. We're gonna put 20%, or we're gonna put 18 on the recreational guys. Well, us recreational guys, maybe not all of us, but us charter fishermen guys, we're trying to feed our families just the same as the commercial guys. So when you go home tonight, take it home and think about it. What is it about your business that makes feeding your family more important than me trying to feed mine? Because I'm trying to feed mine too. I can't do it on one fish. I can barely do it on two. We're not catching two fish most of the time anyway, but the people coming down have the idea that they're going to catch two fish. They have the opportunity. They may not catch it, but they have the opportunity. We've just lost this spring fishery with the trophy season. Just like Ryan said, we haven't fished it for the last 10 years. So taking that away from me, it didn't hurt, but that was a card that we should be saying, what was the percentage that's just been taken away there now? That was voluntarily done. This is about to be taken from us in the fall. 3-4 years ago, I don't know when it was, when we went from the 18-inch fish to the 20-inch fish, your numbers, your paperwork, that's all wonderful, but it doesn't show what the eyes do. And the eyes, just like the guys out here talking earlier, they're very right. You know, the man said earlier, well, we've been regulated right on out of business. Well, it's been happening to us for a long time. It's not just what's going to happen here tonight, what y'all do tomorrow for this fall. It's been going on for a while. And we've been losing, on the losing end for a long time. I agree with what a lot of you said. We don't get the fair shake in Virginia. The northern states, we've got the biggest section of the bay in Virginia. The striped bass roam right on through, eat up all our crabs and our pogies, and go right on up into Maryland just to be harvested for their income, while we only get a little bitty portion. Well, it's time for us to stand up for our portion of fish. Stop letting Atlantic States Marine Fisheries take this stuff away. These proposals, not either one of them look palatable to us. If we go to anything more of an increase in size limit fish is just going to create more dead discard. I have no idea what the numbers are, but I can tell you in just a few short years that has changed from the 18-inch fish to the 20-inch fish, we've seen less fish. And we're part of the problem. I know we are. But we're not part of the problem voluntarily. We're part of the problem because it was shoved down our throats to take our 18-inch fish away. We put our 18-inch fish in the box and went home by 11 o'clock with our limit. Now we stay until 2 or 3 o'clock until it's absolutely put in all your time to give the people their money's worth. And we throw back legal fish that are beautiful that could be going in the box as our limit. We're throwing them back bleeding by the gills, and they swim off to die for nothing, for the crabs to eat. And meanwhile, the commercial guys are allowed to have the 18-inch fish, and they don't even want them. Because they want a fish that's worth something. A 22, 25-inch fish is worth something. So why are we throwing 18-inch fish back to die for nobody's use other than crab food and seagull food? You go up to a 20-inch, 23-inch fish, we're going to have more dead fish. And I know that's what's coming. Mine's already been made up here, or whether it's Atlantic States Marine Fisheries, they're giving us these options. But anything that increases the size, you're going to get the opposite effect of what you're going for. And that's just layman's telling you the way it really is. We're throwing back a lot of dead fish, and we're going to throw back even more now because we're going to have to stay out there longer to get our limit. And whether it's one or two, it ain't going to matter. We're still going to be killing a lot more fish. I'd rather see you think up something a little bit more common sense-wise of go back to the 18-inch fish. Two fish per person over 2 inches, over 18 inches, keep your two fish and go home. Anything over 28, you only get one fish off. And if we had to give up some season to do that, to make that adjustment, why not give up something that we're not using already? You know, why can't we give up some days in the spring that are not being used? You know, we're not using them. The fish aren't there. Numbers may say, and some of you say there's a whole lot of rockfish out there. Maybe there are. We don't see them in the recreational side. We may fish every day. We don't see them. What we've seen is a change in cycle. The fish are moving further north, or maybe they're not all coming in the bay. I don't know. But there certainly is a problem. There's less of them. And your numbers may not show them on the commercial side because they're not fishing for them all year. They're fishing for them in the spring when they come up in one big slug. I used to gill net too. No problem. Get your limit in 2 weeks, set your net and wait and strain the jellies for maybe 4 weeks. But when they come, they come. It's all in a slug. It happens real quick. So when the fish do that, you don't really know. Those numbers don't mean anything to me on that board. We're saying that the numbers aren't down on the harvest. Doesn't show that they're actually less fish. It just shows that you got the limits were hit. They got the quota. Fish came up in a big slug. They were caught. It's less of them when they're coming in that slug, I can tell you. Because when they come back down, they don't come back down in a slug. They come back down in threes and fours and one here and one there, and there's a whole lot less of them. The catch numbers will show you that. And there again, I'm not trying to take anything away from one side or the other. I'm just telling you the facts. That's what's happening. That's where it is. I hope that you'll think about it when you go home. You know, these guys are trying to make a living too. Our lives and our families are important to us the same as yours are to you. 18 to 20%, it's not palatable for us. That's shutting the door. That's putting us right on out of business on the striped bass. You know, we need some help here too. Somebody mentioned, you know, if fishing is still good up north, well, I don't want to move up north. I pay my taxes in Virginia. And I think that the people that are elected in this state should stand up for us people paying our taxes in Virginia. We shouldn't have to leave this state to make a living doing what we grew up doing. My boat is named Heritage for a reason. Everybody in my family on both sides, my mother and my father's side, they made a living in the commercial side. I've worked in it as well as the charter business. It's my heritage, and I think I don't feel like it's fair for Virginia to keep letting the Yankee states step all over top of us and take everything away from us for their own benefit. And thank you, gentlemen, for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Richard?
How are you doing? Very good. Denny Dobbins. I'm president of the Fisherman's Anglers. I am one of the board members of the Saltwater Fishing Association and on several of the advisory boards. Couple points. First, you need to talk to your fishery enforcers, whatever, that fly out over the Atlantic during November, December, and January. They find that there is so many rockfish, you see miles and miles of rockfish. I personally see a large number of them when I go out sea bass fishing in February and so forth. As you go off 20 miles off the Currituck Light and see a hole with nothing but rockfish as far as you can go. I think the measurements of the fish barrel mass is probably way off. That doesn't affect here because somebody else has made an assessment of what the barrel mass is, and of course we're judging it. The problem with that, you know, you're trying to measure the fish in the ocean, and that's extremely difficult. I know we're doing it with the commercial, and we're doing it with the landings, so forth and so forth. But it's not right. It's off. Now, Virginia, again, as several people indicated, we're taking a beating because of what Massachusetts and if you look at their numbers, you look at New York especially, the harbor of New York was unbelievably full of rockfish last year. I fished it. You had so many fish that they were actually jumping to the baits. You put a menhaden down and they made a grab it. That hadn't hurt. That's since Sandy hit up there. It's washed it out. It's much better. They have a really good fishery. That's not being measured, not being looked at really. Those people were, what, 200% over their quota, and now we're trying to measure that and go down 25% or 18% here to make up for their overfishing. While you cannot address it directly, we're going to have to come up with something, I know, but there is other ways. There's an appeal to the Secretary of Commerce. There's different ways they can be appealed. We need to get our people involved on it. If our governor would get involved with it a little bit, I think we probably could get an exception to the requirements because of the situations that occurred with the fish here. Now, my board, not the general group, but my board did look at the three possibilities, and we certainly prefer the 18% reduction by everybody. Now, we didn't know about the emergency action for tomorrow. That's what really is going to take and harm us. It takes a lot to get a boat out, put it on the water, and try to fish for one fish. It probably won't happen. You'll probably have more discards and abuse of the process than any other way. The two, we didn't like it, but we stayed with it. We thought it was good to handle the fish, to handle the biomass, and to do a reduction. A reduction on the size of the fish, yes. It put all tournaments out of business. You go to a 36-inch fish, you as well as to give up on the tournaments. They're all going to be cookie-cutter 36-inch fish in December when the tournaments go on. In fact, we had to stop our tournament in December because of lack of fish and size. But that probably is acceptable to most of the fishing, recreational fishermen. I do think it should be equal, though, if we're going to take and do a reduction with the commercial and the recreational. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Jim, did you have something to add?
Jim Dawson, commercial fisherman out of Chincoteague. I listen to people talking, and Ernie said, I think the biggest thing that made a difference to me is that our numbers here did not warrant an emergency action be taken. And for, you know, I know these guys. I've known Ryan for at least 25 years. I mean, it's time for Virginia to stand up and do something. And if it's like just like New Jersey did, then I'll be damned if you shouldn't do it. I'd hate to be in your shoes. You're taking over on a bad time. I spent 30 years in fisheries politics, you know, going to the meetings and going to ASMSC Mid-Atlantic. And I think you got a good argument that Virginia has not warranted this emergency action. If our numbers aren't over it, then somebody needs to stand up and say and try to take the action that you can. I don't know what kind of power you have, but I think you have an awful lot of people behind you. So whatever you need, whatever support you need, that's what I heard the loudest. Thanks.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
This is Zane Oliver. I run Northern Export Fishing alongside Ryan, Jack, and David. And I just want to reiterate what they said. This will put us out of business economically, every tackle shop done. Hotels done, restaurants. We don't have a lot up around Reedville where we're at. And this will hurt us very badly. So I don't do it for a living full time. Just about there. I've been doing it about 4 years, around 80, 90 trips a year. So it's a pretty good business, but this is going to end it for me. So just remember that when y'all vote on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Can I make one additional comment?
Yes, sir.
This meeting was...
They have to record you.
I need to be heard everywhere.
This meeting was set on the 26th, the same date that a big meeting with the Menhaden group. That's the reason recreational fishermen, large number with the senators today, trying to deal with the Menhaden situation.
Thank you very much. As soon as Pat's through here. They're going to want our opinion on, the VMRC is going to want our opinion on this emergency action. Pat, do you want to give us any more detail as to what we are or are not expected to say?
The items that are up there that are in red are for the emergency action tomorrow. So if you want to consider each one separately and, you know, as an advisory committee, you know, say your support or, you know, your disapproval of those, that would help. So that tomorrow when we have this meeting, Jeff's going to be there and he can represent that. He can say, you know, they were against this or they were for that. So that's what I would suggest, at least for those three in red. You know, decide as a committee what your thoughts are on those. And like I said, we struggled with this. We struggled with doing this as an emergency order versus doing the normal process. And it was very difficult, but the thought what finally came down was we felt that if we went through our normal process and we asked for a public request for public meeting tomorrow, waited until September to have the final vote on that, that the general public would only have 9 days notice, final notice before we did anything. The emergency order will go, you know, by doing an emergency order, it takes place within 30 days. it will be finalized at our September meeting.
We're doing this to get ahead of the situation.
Yes.
And that's coming from the top, I understand.
It's coming from everybody. It's not just from the top. It's we know we have to do something. And looking at, we know we have to come up with an 18% cut, and we're using that as our base. That's what we have to come up with. And Alex has worked very hard on this, coming up with a lot of different scenarios and what would work. And we presented a lot of options to you in the past, and we'd have to cobble 8-9 things together to get those percentages. And it's so the idea behind this was to come up with a plan that we can support. It actually, the first one gives us more than we actually need, so we may be able to extend the season. And that gives us some options of other things that we can do, because it gives us more than that 18%.
But they're still not, what they have proposed in Addendum 6 is not as tough as what we're trying to do today. Is that right? That's what's listed on the board there?
Ours is, it's a little bit more, because it's up to 24% the 36 inches is only about less than 0.5%. And one fish, that one fish is, that is one that gave us a lot of savings. Going to one fish gives us a lot of savings.
There's no charter votes, it gives you a way bigger savings.
Wait a minute, when the chairman, please. I refresh my memory, what they're going to propose in Addendum 6 is to go to one fish or to two fish?
There were several options.
There were several options.
I'll go back to it. So
no, we don't have to waste a lot of time on it.
There are
some two fish options in the other one though.
Very small slow ones.
Correct. So that there are options with two fish possession limits. A lot of those are very narrow slots, like 20 to 23 inches. There are one fish possession options as well, including this option is included. It's the 36-inch max is not part of that. But
I'm just not convinced that we're not being a little harder on these people than we have to be with an emergency action, just to get ahead of the situation that is going to be addressed with possibly less restringent actions in the future. And I know there's some people in Richmond that don't like the message we're trying to send a different message, let me put it that way. And that's probably a risky thing for me to say, but I'll leave it at that and let the rest of the board speak. Yes.
It seems to me like the one fish is, we need to throw that out, it needs to stay too. And if there's some way around days, because like they said, you can knock days off. It's just, even if you make it a lot shorter season, they still have a season. If you go to one fish, they have nothing. So it seems to me like you need to, talk to some of the guys that have a dog in the fight to find out,
I mean, with the charter captains, he pointed out that, to get that reduction, we'd have to do with the entire spring season.
And you don't even care about the spring season.
Probably all of October, maybe even a little bit of
November. So the idea is...
And is that... No, I'm seeing...
We can't give up November. We could give up 15 days in October and all of the spring fishery, and we'd never feel it. Because October, we're mostly catching bluefish in our area now with the warmer... Later winter coming on, and we looked at that,
and that's what the data reflect, is that not a lot of harvest occurs in the spring fishery, and it only ramps up starting in October. So you really only get those savings with 85% of the harvest occurring in wave 6, November, December, from those waves. We have one of the shortest seasons, so we're trying not to eliminate their season. How the season?
If you say it's two fish, what dates would you have to have? What dates would work with your numbers?
eliminate the spring season, and what to get to 18%, what dates in for the fall season would work? Like cut all of October, for example.
Yeah, I don't have that in front of me. I have looked at it from my recollection. It was.
But isn't ASMFC's, isn't the 18% for 2020 and not 2019?
That's correct. The implementation date is 2020 for these options.
Why are we? I don't understand why we're doing this now.
We're doing this because we know the assessment says there is a serious problem with the stock, and there's a process with everything. An amendment's up to 2 years, and addendum's a year. So we don't want to sit here knowing there's a problem when we can do something
about it. Any days for a two fish season is better than no days at one.
Is it possible, how many are charter boat captains versus regular fishing boats? Is it possible, because you said that option one gives you more than you need, if you separate it out the commercial, the charter guys from the regular fishermen, and let the charter guys have two and everybody else have one. Is that an option? Would that put you where you need, say, these guys? Would that work? Those numbers get you in there.
The problem is ASMFC considers the charters to be part of the recreations.
Yeah.
Right? But that's the whole thing that I've screamed for years. At some point, you've got to have sector separation. And it's going to come to that. And all the recreational guys are going to scream.
I'm not defending it.
No, I'm just saying that is that big bad word that I have screamed for years now. And it's because, you know, we get caught up in the recreational. Something has to give so the guys that are doing it for a living aren't penalized by the commercial end, by the recreational end of it. And I don't know if I'll see it in my lifetime, but at some point it has to give. And I know, you know, they're doing it with the blue lines. There's a lot of fish out there, and a lot of up north. You have Massachusetts, for example, has different regulations for head boats than for the recreational guys. It's happening everywhere. This might be a good second time to look at it in Virginia.
It's happened in Virginia. I mean, a head boat.
The blue line. Seven,
yeah. Recreation
yeah.
Five.
So what you've heard from all of us today.
I mean, that could be a recommendation that we provide tomorrow.
Cut the dates, but leave it. Cut the dates to match two fish per day.
Bernie, you have a comment?
Isn't this more restrictive than anything ASMFC has proposed for next year?
Yes.
So we're going to be even more restrictive than the most restrictive way.
And a lot
of states have minimum size limits that approach or exceed those expenses along the coast.
That's further up more. That's further up.
I mean, they have, I think, 38 or 40 or more than 40 in Maine, but I know some of them exceed that. So this is I know why this is being done, and I know where it's coming from. Regardless of whatever y'all, I know for a fact. But it's not been thought out. Just like the Coast Guard not in, I have no problem with not in for rock. But you have a lot of people use 10 to 11 and a half or 12 that's already popped up for black trout. They can strike back.
This is just
so what are you going to do? Throw them overboard dead and increase more? Well, that if you have tags, you know, that's something. There's a lot of things that need to be thought about besides just coming from above. Mm-hmm. That's not being thought of. You know, we may very well increase mortality. This fall might be a big problem in the ocean. The ocean flood is probably already.
So what do you call it?
The Bayside, a lot of voice from, I know from Secretary for a fact, and I'm sure other places do catch some fish in the fall. And they all have 8-inch nets, so basically you plug their fishery because they're not. You know, a good example would be the shad fishery. They phased it out in the ocean against all scientific advice. It was all political. Virginia was against it. You know, they didn't want to phase it out, but it was phased out over 4 year, 5 year period. This is, nobody knows anything about it, including Ken. And he's on the commission.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was surprised. It certainly sounds like to me he was surprised. He could tell me different if he wasn't. It's just something that it just needs to be thought through more because, like I say, you have black-tailed fishery, which uses nets that does catch straight bass. I don't participate much in them anymore, but I still use one rig sometimes that's in it for to catch black drum because I'm fishing in Tom's Cove area where they're smaller and they're about 29 fish. But, you know, this is going to pass. We know it's going to pass tomorrow. I plan on having a big public hearing in October because I know there's going to be a lot of people upset.
It would be September.
It doesn't affect me.
I will say this, and this is probably where y'all are coming from. Usually our emergency actions, we take emergency action and it's done. And by the time we have the public hearing and the final thing, it's already done. And the season's already been going on. We have another commission meeting before the recreational season opens. So that's really the method behind the madness here is to get the ball rolling now, and the real meeting would be September, where this would actually...
What happens a lot of times is we put in a request for a public hearing, and we come to the commission and we ask them, and we don't get much feedback. But then when we go to the public hearing for it, it's going to... So by doing an emergency order, it's going to bring... I mean, obviously it's bringing more attention, and it's giving us more time to make adjustments to this.
It took me a while to figure that out. So it's making tomorrow morning not as dire, but it should get everyone's attention.
And like I said earlier, we struggled with this. Why can't we just do a public hearing, request for a public hearing? And we went back and forth, and then the decision was like, well, if we do it this way, it's going to bring it to everyone's attention, and we have 37 days before the season starts to address this.
I'm sorry, Jeff.
All of a sudden, I'm confused.
One more question here. I'll have to ask you this tomorrow morning. I ask you now. Everything we just said there is true about the recreation. We can pass this regulation tomorrow as emergency action, and you can squat if we don't repass it again in September. But the commercial gill mesh size, it depends on when we decide it takes effect, mm-hmm. whether that same thing is true. If we say it doesn't take effect until after the next meeting, then that's okay. It really doesn't do anything tomorrow either. It mm-hmm. just starts the ball rolling kind of thing. But if we say it takes effect on Wednesday, then...
I think that's up to the commission when they want it to take effect.
Okay, so that's... I won't go for it to start Wednesday.
That 30 days doesn't do much for the charter captains who have to book
right.
charters.
Realistic.
You can't do that.
And the charter organizers. I mean, Mike Manning's got a lot invested. And that thing, he's taking registrations now and stuff. So, I mean, they're going to... I was surprised they were doing something this year in addition to what they already did. So I was surprised when I got my agenda. And then when I got here, I was further surprised because it had been changed more.
All
right, by doing it this early, we do have a medium.
You can pass an emergency regulation and make the effective date. It don't necessarily have to be Wednesday.
It doesn't.
You can make it 30 days in the future and have time to work out all the other stuff.
It has to be within 30 days, and our next commission day fits within that 30-day window.
I don't want to work out all the other stuff before we make an emergency declaration. Okay, John.
I want to make sure I understand the process. I thought an emergency proclamation or declaration, as is taking place, didn't require any vote. Does it or does it not require a vote?
Requires a vote
from the commission.
It does require a vote from the commission.
Yes, from the commission.
Okay.
North Carolina can do it.
So, to Ken's point, there will be another meeting.
In September.
In September. Okay.
To either finalize or reject.
I understand.
Or all.
The rest is only good for 30 days.
I got it.
At that time, they can be finalized, rejected, or altered.
Yeah.
We could start another emergency if you altered it.
I think we should make a formal statement as the committee. Does anybody want to draw up a draft for us to vote on? I don't don't think as chair I'm supposed to do that.
Yeah. Me too.
I'll make the motion that we're against this emergency because it's something we never knew anything about. It sprung on us in the last 10 minutes of the meeting, basically. We didn't know it was coming, had no heads up. And we think that there needs to be other options, and we need to explore the possible side effects, unintended side effects.
Longest freaking motion I've ever heard.
We meet again.
And I'll second it.
I'll move that we reject this emergency because we were told in the latter part of the meeting, I said 10 minutes, I'll change it to the latter part of the meeting, so we had no time to talk about it, and all of us represent groups,
mm-hmm.
so we really need to discuss it with other people, not just the ones here. We think it's having unintended consequences across both commercial and recreational fisheries that need to be explored before such a thing would pass.
Should we say anything about the potential
potential
damage?
That's
very, very
I'm not voting tonight.
I'll second it.
I'm sorry, who seconds? Did you get that, young lady? All in favor of the motion, please raise your right hand. All opposed? Abstentions?
I abstain.
It's 403. 403. All right. Very good. And we will get copies of this to take
home. Yeah, we'll get them to you before you leave.
Yep.
We should print them
up.
Copies for all of us?
Yep.
Thank you.
Just that one page, right?
Yes, please.
Thank you very much.
Update from the summer meeting.
Given the time, I think I can just mail this out to you, if you don't mind. I mean, it's really the only thing, we've already talked about striped bass and tautog. I mean, and I don't, cobia, the addendum passed, and if we get into that, we may be here for a while. But I'll send out the summary of the meeting. If anybody has a question, they're more than welcome to give us a call and talk about it. If that's okay with you, Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Okay. That's all we have.
Do we have a meeting date for the next meeting?
It's going to be in November. We're not sure of the date yet. We're still working on that because we have a couple other things that are coming up. Just to let you know, we have electrofishing for blue catfish. That's going to be coming before you. It's an emerging fishery that's coming up. Alexa will give a presentation on that. We're going to move forward with that starting next spring probably.
Okay.
With a very limited number of boats.
Good.
So that's one of the big things that's coming up this fall as well, so as well as striped bass.
I'm supposed to ask, okay, Mike.
Could we via email to save time here? Could I initiate a discussion via email to all of us on any ideas on changing the times of the meeting, specifically going earlier?
Sure. Staff is nodding yes, so I think we would all be in agreement with that.
My job might interfere.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
What's the earliest you can be here, Scott? Thank
you. I propose 4 o'clock.
What time?
4 o'clock.
If that's the will of the committee.
What are you saying? 4 o'clock instead of
6. That's when our SMAC meeting meets, and that's probably, I'll tell you after I get home.
I don't object to 4 o'clock.
Yeah, we'll email out to because we're missing 6 folks tonight, so we'll email it out and see if 4 o'clock works better for everyone. Okay. Is that it, Chairman? Is that it?
Well, yeah, I don't think we have time to take up new business or any of that. So, mission accomplished, session adjourned, whatever you care to call it.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.